the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida. It's the Annie Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's April 29th, 2011, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet, or at least what's left of it. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Hey, the wheels are turning. Apparently, we're starting to be able to get our money, and you and I both cashed out.
We both cashed out. It was rather sad. I did it. I think I actually did it this morning.
Yeah, I did it this morning too, but it was after midnight. But I did it same day. I did it today. So we'll see what happens. I did it via e-checks. I don't know how you did it. How'd you do it?
Well, I did just a check, I guess.
Just
I
have a check
it
sent mailed
to me. You. Yeah, I don't think it gave me the option of the e-check. I mean, it defaulted to like a wire transfer, which I didn't realize it, and then it said, "I'm sorry, your balance isn't big enough." I'm like, "Oh man!"
Yeah.
And then it said the balance needs to be cash minimum has to be $50,000.
Yeah.
I'm like, "Come on!"
I was reading that on like some of the forums. I was like, $50,000? Wow, no, that ain't happening.
So then that's when I realized they just defaulted to that. So I clicked check, then it said, "All right, we're good." So. We'll see. You know, it was really sad. And you know, we had one of our listeners, Edward, you know, who just dominated Apes and was probably more crushed about this than any of us.
Right.
wrote in this week saying, asking what we thought about the cashing out. And, you know, what I told him is, here's the thing. You know, I was going to leave my money in there because I only had like $350, you know, not life-changing money at all.
Right.
But I, just from the sense I get from talking to our Stars contacts and other people I'm reading, Stars just isn't going to come back to the U.S. market until such time that it's clearly all the shadowness of it is gone, if you know what I mean, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So complete regulation of it. And at that point, it's not going to be hard at all to get money in and off,
yeah,
on and off. So it, you know, that was the only reason I was kind of keeping it in is like, you know, hey, if they come back into the market and then I got to go through the pain of, you know, figuring out how to get money on, I might as well just leave it on. But yeah, at this point, I'll take that $350 and, you know, blow it on blow.
Well, that's a great point, though. I mean, obviously, if they come back, they're not going to come back unless it's legal, because they're not going to be able to come back unless it's legal. So you might as well, you know, it's going to be easy to get money on then. So why tie that money up for what could be years? It was funny that you had to take all your money off, too. You couldn't take off some.
Yeah.
Either you left it all or you took it all off. You couldn't be like, well, I'll take a chance with $100 and leave it on there. Nope. Yeah, take it all off. And I didn't have enough, like, freaking player points to do anything with them. I mean, I had enough that probably could have bought something in the store or whatever, but I don't think I could have converted it. Although I really didn't try, I don't think I could have converted it to any tournament entries and then money or something. So I left that in there.
Yeah, you know, I was going to try. And, you know, when you log on, it was the first time I logged on since Black Friday, right?
Yeah.
And the funny thing was, hey, there's a new version of the software to download. I'm like,
oh,
great.
Oh, no way.
So I got to wait for the download a new version of software that I can't use. Thanks. So it completed that, and then boom, it came up with a big pop-up that said, you know, good news, U.S. players, you can cash out now. And then it was almost like ominous. It's like, you must cash out now.
Yeah, I know.
And I'm like, you know what? And the reason I didn't click OK right there is because I wanted to go see whether I had enough points and whether I should convert them in some way or I can get something out of it. So I canceled that. When turns out I had probably the smallest collection of FPPs in the history of PokerStars. Because I never played cash. I always played these little, you know, $5, $10 tournaments. So
yeah.
I was generating them enough. So, yeah, I left, you know, I hate to leave the kids at the pool there, but those guys are going to stay there.
You know, when you get that software update, it's kind of like paying taxes when you don't have children. You know,
yeah.
You know you're paying for kids to go to school, but they're not your own kids. And nothing you can do about it. But it'll be interesting to see if I get my money into my account before you get your check. And we'll keep everybody updated on our progress too, see how our cash outs go. But I will wonder if and be prepared for, you know, like DHL to come up with a package and you're like, what is this? You know, and then you remember, oh, it's my check. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm going on vacation. That's why we're doing the show so early this week. So I didn't want to do that and have them show up with a check and I wouldn't be here. I don't want to go through all that. So I tried e-checks first since I.
Oh, you know, that's
account.
A good point. Yeah. Anyway, I think I probably could have done e-checks now because what you clicked like the bank transfer.
It said up top, it said, these are the options that you have. And the top one said e-checks with the account ending and then
that.
The four numbers that I had set up. So that's my actual bank
option.
Account.
Which is weird because that's how I funded it last time. Hmm.
Hmm.
I could have done a bank transfer, but I always hate doing bank transfers.
Yeah,
it's hard to get the actual check. And I thought the other interesting thing was, we highly encourage you to cash this check at your local bank, at your own bank.
Oh, yeah.
Some third-party check cashing service. So you can see a bunch of people running off the AmScot or something and being denied.
Oh, my God. So we'll see what happens.
Well, you know, we got to fill the void somehow, right? We can't play anymore. And so I know for you and me, that means we're watching way too much television,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, more time for TV. Isn't that great?
And not that I just picked up Celebrity Apprentice because of this, because, you know, I've been a fan for a while anyhow, and even got my little Celebrity Apprentice fantasy team. Don't judge. And, you know, so it's the highlight of the week for the wife and I to watch, because she has her own team as well, too. So, you know, gives us one more thing to fight about every week. And a couple weeks ago, they had a challenge where the two teams had to work for Omaha Steaks.
Ooh.
Yeah. You know, as Donald Trump would say, phenomenal company, great company.
You sound just like him.
I've been using them forever. You know, whenever I have steaks, it's our Omaha Steaks. Vote for me for president. And so the challenge was that they had to do this live cooking thing, and then they had to create a new variety pack for Omaha Steaks to sell, right?
Ah, okay.
Because it's not good enough for me to call up and say, hey, can you send me a filet mignon? I need to have a pack, because I'm an American. You know, I need to have a bunch of crap that you put together and overcharge me for, right?
Right.
So the women's team, which is ASAP, decided to go with a poker night pack of Omaha Steaks.
Huh.
I thought that was kind of interesting. I'm like, great. And then, of course, Marlee Matlin, who is on Team Scott, by the way, is like, you know, poker's so big now. It's so huge. And which I think is funny that that people still think poker is huge now.
Yeah.
When it's really, in our mind, it's kind of like, you know, plateaued or dipped a little bit. But that's great for us that the people that don't play still think poker's huge.
Yeah.
I'm not going to dissuade them from that at all. So they're like, hey, we'll put together a poker night pack. I'm like, all right, that's great, right? So they put together their little poker night pack. And Chris, included in it was creamed spinach.
Wow. I've never seen that in the Long household when we show up for our home game.
Yeah, I was going to say, first of all, one, I treat you guys like dogs anyhow. I put out a couple pretzels, maybe some potatoes.
Bowl of water.
Yeah, yeah. And that's about the extent of the catering that Scott Long does for the home game.
Yeah.
So the fact that anybody out there would cook steaks was a market improvement over what I do. But but I can't imagine if I go to that level and actually, you know, throw a couple fillets on the old propane Jane outside before you guys come over. I am not going to be cooking you cream spinach.
Oh, man. I was hoping for some amuse-bouches before the game.
You know, I might be able to talk into some grilled asparagus, you know, a little olive oil or something like that, but cream spinach.
Man.
Can I say that? Yeah, I'm going to check Razia. And can you pass the cream spinach, please?
You got to have something with your steak, though,
from
right?
From Omaha Steaks? This is awesome.
I'm assuming this is before the home game. You know, I mean, you come in, you have dinner, then you play poker or whatever. So
yeah, because we're civilized people like that. We come in, have a little dinner party first and then retire to the game party.
Faso, your pinky needs to be pointing toward the ceiling as you're drinking your... So were there any other products like that they... Was it
It was mostly steaks. I mean, they didn't really spend a lot of time. You could just like quickly look at the pack that they put together. And, of course, the cream spinach jumped out at me and said, hey, Sky, mark this down. Talk about it on the show. most of it was other meat products, which was great. And then dessert was cheesecake, which was nice. You know, I like cheesecake.
Yep. I remember our good friend Gambit, who is our main moderator on the forum and home game player and stuff. I think he invited me once to one of his friend's home games, and it was like in Tampa or something. And as per usual, I was the first one there, so I'm like, I don't know any of these people, so I'm just going to sit like in my car and wait till someone shows up that I know or something. But I went inside. It was a really nice house, and they had a spread. It was like literally like something like this. I mean, if I recall correctly, there might have even been like caviar or something. I was
wow,
this is cool, you know. So, and they all sat around and talked, and that was the time where I just loved playing Singos, and I just wanted to play poker, and I wanted to play with these terrible players, and all I could think of was, let's play poker. Let's play poker. Let's play poker. Let's play poker. And they're all like talking about work. And I'm like, let's play poker. Let's play poker. Oh, caviar. Let's play poker. Let's play poker. That's all I could do. But really, if I was not so focused on the poker, I might have actually enjoyed the spread. It was something of this creamed spinach level, you know. There was some good food there. And I should have really enjoyed it. But I had dinner before I got there, not realizing they were going to have such a nice spread. So here's a word to the wise. Don't eat before you go to someone's home who's having a home game, because you might just have Omaha steaks and cream spinach.
Yeah, unless you're going to Scott Long's house, then definitely eat before you get
yeah,
there.
Because you're going to have pretzels and water.
Yeah, you're going to have to hope that Gambert brings a little Caesar's pizza or Steve's wife cooks the nice little, I don't know what she cooks.
The calzone.
Yeah, the calzone. Yeah.
You know, it's funny because I was watching some television too, late night television, and you remember that television show News Radio?
Of course.
Yes. And Jimmy James, played by Stephen Root, great character actor. And so I'm watching it, and it's like the first time I've seen it in years, because for some reason the syndication went away for a while, or whatever it was, or whatever the scheduling was. But
well, they had, you know, you got to get enough Everybody Loves Raymond and King of the Queens on.
Yeah, I know.
There's no room for any other shows now on syndication.
Yeah, all the New York shows have to take up every freaking slot on the. And of course, News Radio is a New York show as well, of course. But I'm watching, I'm looking through the guide, and I'm like, oh, here's a News Radio show. All right, I'll watch one. And it's kind of late, so I'm kind of like watching with one eye open. You know, I'm getting ready to fall asleep. And it's the episode when Jimmy James plays poker with all his billionaire friends. And this is like a hilarious episode because they're playing for like not money, but like all of the assets they have in their company, including employees.
Awesome.
So like all of a sudden they're having a meeting at the radio station, and this guy wheels in like a circuit board or whatever the hell you call those mixing boards, and some sort of radio equipment. It's this big thing, and like, what? I didn't order that. What's this? Did you order that? No, I didn't order that. And they're like, Mr. James won this in the poker game. And then when that happened, everyone realized, oh, no, they better go running and scurrying for their careers and their possessions, because this guy's going to, like, gamble anything. So then, like, a few minutes later, it turns out that he lost, like, Phil Hartman, Bill McNeil, their news anchor. He lost him to, like, a station in Atlanta. And so they have to, like, try to win him back. But Jimmy James is so horrible at poker that they don't want to use this guy. So here's the reason why I'm bringing this up. He shows up at the news radio station, and that the main character is Dave and whatever the girl's name is. They're all together and in his office, and they're trying to find out who's going to play poker for Jimmy as like his, you know, whatever. So Jimmy James uses this quiz to like get them to prove who the best poker player is. He says, "All right, what are the odds of being dealt five of a kind in five different suits?" So Dave is like, let's see, that would probably be, since there's that many guineas, I don't know. And then she's like, she spits out the number right away. And he's like, all right, she's my man, or whatever it was. And Dave's like, wait a minute. He's like, and ultimately, they were like doing it seriously. It wasn't a joke. It was like he was really thinking that you could make five of a kind with five different suits, and she like came up with the odds of it. And I'm like, hello? Really? I mean, it's bad enough when they say, I call your 10,000 and raise you $3. Okay, it's bad enough when they say that in Hollywood. But to like make up a fifth suit and a fifth kind? I mean, I don't understand. It was really bizarre.
That would be great. That could be a new new bit for us to name the fifth suit.
Well, it'd probably be Lucky Charms. It'd be like moons, blue moons or something, right? I mean,
blue moon. See, it can't be two names. It's got to be, you know, we got hearts, we got spades.
Well, it'd be moons, but I'm just saying moons. The color would be
okay.
Blue.
All right. I can get behind that. That's going to mess up the four-color deck then.
Right, and then we'll make it a five-color deck and screw the reds and blacks. It'd be one red, one black, one green. Oh, no, one blue, and then, I don't know, one yellow?
See, it's not as easy as you think.
It's not. I just couldn't believe it. And they were spitting it out like matter-of-factly. Like there were five suits and five of a kinds possible. Oh, my God. It was so sad. And then I watched it, and they had like Joe, the guy, the engineer.
Yeah.
Who always does these crazy things. He makes a Boba Fett doll for her as a lucky charm. So she puts it down as like a card protector. And it turns out that Joe has a little camera in there, and he puts the camera on his eye so you can see the cards of everybody. and she throws it out the window, and he starts falling. He's like, oh, he thinks he's falling and everything. Oh, my God. It was a pretty funny episode. But, I mean, anytime you see poker on TV now, and when it's a poker show, like, that happened, like, before I got into poker, I always forget that episode existed, so I always enjoy it when I get to see it on the reruns, you know?
Absolutely.
So, but, yeah, Five of a Kind, guy. Let's have that in the home game somehow.
You know, and the funny thing is Dave Foley didn't ever call out Five of a Kind when he hosted Celebrity Poker Showdown.
Oh, I know. I know. And that's probably why he got the show, because of his experience on news radio.
Yes, he must have learned something from that episode.
Unbelievable. This is what we're you know, resulting in here, because...
Yes, thank you, federal government.
Yes. Now, thanks for ruining the show.
Yeah, yeah. You know, good business for TiVo, but bad business for everything else here. Oh, well, you know, I couldn't play online again, so I went out to the local live room last week to, you know, do the proofs. I always take my proofs out and play. And one of our local rooms, Stampa Bay Downs, has been starting this thing on Mondays now, which is just kind of crazy, ridiculously generous on Mondays. All Royal Flushes pay $4,999. That's not a misprint. That's not $49.99 as with a decimal point. And that's almost $5,000.
That's awesome.
All right. And then also real big money payouts for quads and straight flushes as well, too. And so I'm like, you know what? I'll go out and I'll proof the pages like I normally do. I normally do it during a tournament or something because, you know, I don't like to play no limit. But I'm like, you know what? I'm going to take a shot at this $5,000. As much as I hate jackpots and everything, when you make them too good for me, I can't turn my way. And I'm going to go there. I'm going to get on the 2-4 limit game, and I'm going to play as passive as you possibly can.
Yeah.
And only play starting hands that qualify for the jackpot, and I'm going to play them all the way to the end because the particular manager called me up and said, you know, hey, of the first three Royals we paid, two of them were runner-runner.
Oh, my God.
So people just stick it in with anything at end, right? So, of course, I get there, and the list for 2-4 limit hold'em was like 17 people deep. Every table was packed, of course. I mean, because when you're going to do a promotion like this, I mean, you better have every table packed so you're making the money back somehow. Yeah. So I put my name on the list. And then all of a sudden, the 1-2-no limit list cleared up really quick. And I'm like, all right. I was going to come here. I was going to put $40 into the down the chute, you know, in a desperate attempt to win $5,000. But now, the 1-2-no limit, I got to get on there. I got to buy in for at least, I could buy in for 60, but I'm not going to do that. So I was going to buy in for 100, and I'm like, man, I didn't really want to lose all my stack on a hand because it's harder to play for the jackpot on no limit, right?
Yeah.
Because people could push you off the hands, 2-4 limit. I can sustain four raises all the way to the end and be happy with it. But if someone shoves for 300, I'm like, oh, man, now I got to, that's a tougher decision, right?
Yeah.
But I'm like, all right, I got to play, right? So I sit down the 1-2-no limit. And wow, this game played exactly like I would have played the 2-4 limit game, Chris. It was like if there was a raise preflop, which there rarely ever was, it was like $4 or $6. All right, so I mean, you could easily call it. Almost no one re-raised, and it was really passive all the way to the end, except for, of course, when the flop took care of any shot of anybody winning anything.
Then I mean, they got crazy on you.
Right. I mean, you could probably go runner-runner quads, obviously, at that point. But, I mean, you know right away on the flop whether the straight flush or royal flush is going to hit because you got to use both cards in your hand. So,
right.
So yeah. So, I mean, and it actually worked in my favor because I had pocket kings once. And I did. That was the one after I saw how passive everybody else was playing, I'm like, all right, I'm going to change my game here a little bit and try to play my bigger hands stronger. And, of course, pocket kings could still hit quads, of course.
Right.
But, so I was raising big with that. And then, of course, you know, I would get lucky and a flop would come, you know, totally ragged. So I'm like, woohoo! And I could put a nice bet. And if I got called, I know it was not anybody chasing anything like that. And I probably had a beat. So I ended up walking away with a $60 profit for the day. You know, not the $5,000 I was hoping for. But,
right.
You know, hey, I'll take it. But, man, it drives home how much these jackpots warp the game of poker.
Well, it's good to know that every person has their price. Yours apparently is $4,999. So if I ever need to convince you to do something, all I have to do is to let you know that there's a chance I may give you $4,999, and you'll just cave.
Oh, I like it. Well played. Well played.
But yeah, and it's funny. I really am surprised, though, that you did do it, just because we've talked on the show before about how you're always like, it's crazy to go play with a jackpot and you play poker, and you know, and now you're like, hey, I'm going to go over there with $40 and try to win $5,000. So, you know, you have your price. You're a whore. So that's good to know. I'm glad that you're taking your career in that direction.
Never deny that I am an American easily marketed. I'm a little lemming. You put the right little Pavlov in front of me and this dog is going to bark.
Oh, man. So really, though, you could take advantage of that game.
I think in the past on the show we talked about this, and we talked about our mutual hatred for the jackpot, that there is a benefit to it, even if you're not a jackpot googly-eyed kid like I was on this Monday. If you're a serious player, you just have to understand that people are going to be playing for that jackpot and adjust your game. And particularly as passive as this was on a no-limit cable, you know, if I went there next week – and I decided, you know what, I'm not going to play for the jackpot. I'm gonna play anti-jackpot. I think you could do pretty well.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
I mean, you could really – I mean, you would probably need a security guard to walk you to the car afterwards. All these people trying to win $5,000 are going to be upset that you keep raising it to 20X pre-flop. But yeah, I mean, a good player is able to adjust to the situation, and a jackpot is part of the situation, I would think. So.
Absolutely, and you'll take down a lot of small pots. Your stack will grow pretty tremendously, and then even if you get called, when the flop comes ragged, you're probably still going to win the pot because, you know, they're just sticking around for, you know, hitting quads or hitting the royal or whatever, and if it's just this crappy flop, you're probably going to take that down too, so that would continue the aggressiveness after the flop as well.
Yeah, but, you know, the flip side, the frustration, and there were a couple people that I think if they had laser beam eyes like Superman, I would have been burnt to a crisp. because I was, again, I played any two cards that could qualify. So I won with 9-5 of spades when I turned to flush. And I think I got a restack, I got a stack on that. And, of course, you know, when you turn over the 9-5, it's just shaking its head. Like, you can't believe this moron's here playing crap like that. I won another pot when I turned a flush with Jack 9 of diamonds. But I had a gut shot straight flush draw at that point, too.
Oh, my God. You must have been freaking.
Yeah. So, like, well, the funny thing is, once we got the money all in on the turn, I was pretty confident I already had a one with my flush anyhow. And when we turned over, obviously, yeah, he didn't have a flush at all. He was just hoping I didn't. So I had him beat already. So I'm sitting there, I'm like, give me a 9. Or, I think I said a 9. So maybe I had Jack 8 or something. But I'm like, give me a 9, baby. And of course it missed. And, but I'm like, hey, I'm happy. I was, you know, stacking up the chips. I'm like, that's all right. I figured a straight flush would have been, it was, I don't know, like $19.99 or something. I mean, it would have been a nice little payday, but I was happy to take the win. And it was the same guy. I felt him twice, I think, was.
Oh.
Crappy little flushes like that.
So do you, let me ask you this. Next time, you should consider the karma rule and say, buddy, if I get the 9, I'll give you back the money I win in this pot. That's what you do.
That's a good point.
Yeah,
that's
and then the poker gods will be like, oh, what a nice guy. Here's a 9 for you. Right? That's what you do.
You know, that's interesting because you sit there thinking, I'm like, all right, I'm a generous guy. You know, if I hit $49.99, you know, I'm gonna do right by the dealer and you know, give he or she a good chunk, and then, you know, again, the karma thing. I the last time I hit a high hand, which obviously was not $49.99, but I think I gave everybody at the table $5 or something.
Yeah,
you know, just to say, hey, you know, here's something for you.
That's cool.
But you're right. If I went $49.99, I would feel morally compelled
to give the guy the money
to push the guy the pot.
Yeah, yeah.
And say, hey, I'll take this $49.99. You keep the $72 there.
Yeah,
have fun.
Yeah. I would do one of the – if it was a smaller jackpot, I mean, I would give him the money he invested back, and I'd give the dealer the money I put in or something, you know, something like that, and then take the jackpot and run. That's the one thing is when they give you the jackpot, you have to put it on the table and play with it. And I'm like, you know, if you're in like a 2-5 game and somebody's got like $3,000 in front of them, then you win $3,000. I don't know if I'm going to stay there with that money.
I don't know about the $49.99. They might give you the option of taking some of that in a check, I would think.
Oh, I don't know.
I know some rooms. I don't know about this room. I know some rooms in the area that you're allowed to request a check for anything above the $1,500 or something like that.
Oh, okay. Because I remember when we were at the IP playing that time, and I was really frustrated with I think it was the limit game we were playing at MGM Grand, so I went back down to the IP, and and I was playing there, and you went to bed, and I stayed up all night playing, and there was a night there, and I won. That was when I met the Italian guys who kissed me on both cheeks.
Oh, yes, yes.
Well, I won a bunch of money that night, and the guy across from me, we were ripping up the table, me and him. We had all the chips on the table, and he made a royal flush, and it paid like, it was like $600 or something. It was huge, and they put it all in front of him, and it was all greens and reds, and he left it right in front of him, and I'm like, man, I would go get something to eat and go to bed if I won.
Yeah, I'd be like,
bucks.
Oh, boy, you know, hey, guy, sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, the wife's texting me. I got to go.
Exactly. Something. Make up some. That's when you want that app on your phone that calls you, fake phone, fake call, you know?
Yeah.
That's when
yeah.
you want that app, and you just hit it, and then, oh, what? She's where? Oh, my God, I got to go, guys. And then you, I don't know. I just wouldn't want to put that much money at risk for no reason. It's free
money.
Well,
I guess
the
flip side is if I had $49.99 in front of me, you know, minus whatever I generously gave out, and the rest of the table had $60 each.
Well, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about like a 2-5 game
or
something.
Yeah. All in. Scotty, you only have one card right now. That's all right. All in.
I only need one card to win. All in.
I'll be coming back from the bathroom running. All in. Deal me in and I'm all in.
Deal me all in. All right. Well, we did get a mailbag, despite the federal government trying to stop email this week. This comes from Tony G. No, not that Tony G. Although he writes us occasionally. He likes to catch up. And he says, I would like a way to send a message or request to poker room managers. We want more tournaments and sit-and-go options. Today I went to 3 local rooms in the space of 1 hour. Could not find a single or multi-table tournament to register in. The recent events of Black Friday have supposedly increased brick-and-mortar attendance as much as 15% in many rooms. Poker rooms would benefit from adding regularly scheduled single-table tournaments. I recommend double or nothing sit-and-goes to my local room manager. And he says, in addition to my complaint about our current single-table 10-player sit-and-goes, which are designed to pay 2 places... And then in parentheses, he says a sit-and-go, which few internet players will consider. Because I guess, you know, they don't pay 2 online, right? They pay 3.
Right.
Yeah.
Usually, yeah.
He says, my suggestion for a daily schedule 2-table paying the top 4 spots also fell on deaf ears. What does a player have to do to get the brick and mortars to realize that the players will be interested in these types of tournaments?
Well, you know, I moved this question to the top of the queue this week because it was a little timely.
Yeah.
And also because, you know, I just, I flew down to Fort Lauderdale this week and, talked to a couple of managers about that and asked them what was going on with Black Friday. And, you know, there's 2 sides to this question here. We got these internet players who are locked out of the game they want to play and going into, live rooms, and trying to play there more often and looking for their experience to be, similar. And then you got the poker room managers who are looking to try to make those players happy while at the same time balancing business concerns, right?
Exactly.
And so what I'm trying to explain to people, and Tony, is 2 sides of this. One, from the poker room manager standpoint, I definitely think if you're a live poker room manager right now, you need to be thinking of ways to make your room more appealing to the internet crowd. And doing it in a sense, you know, trying to push the envelope right to the edge of where it makes good business sense for you. I mean, if you were a poker room manager and you're just sitting back saying, oh, they can't play online now, I guess they're going to be coming into my room. No, they're going to be going to another room, you know, because they want something different. Now, from a player standpoint, what I think people have to understand is this is a good opportunity for us to, and we've done this on the show a lot, but educate players on how the business model is different in a live room than a online room, right?
Right, internet. Yep.
And there's 3. I think there's like 3 big things. One is capacity. You know, a brick and mortar room has, you know, let's say 20 tables.
Right. Well,
a lot of them have less, right?
Yep.
When you're online and you've got 10 people that want to play a table, boop. You know, little Joey in Lithuania pushes a button and a new table pops up. You know, all it takes is a little more bandwidth, right? The brick and mortar poker room can't just push a button and have a new table completely built, put on the floor, rearrange the entire floor to accommodate it, and hire a dealer to deal at it. You just can't do it.
Yeah.
So they got capacity problems that you don't have online. you have the dealers too. I mean, online there's no dealer. You just set it up live. You need to have a live person dealing, so you can't if you overstaff the room with dealers. Remember, dealers work on tips, yeah. And now you're creating a morale problem if there's not enough games for them. And if you understaff it, then you've got long wait lists, and people get frustrated. So that's a consideration. Well, look at that. I got so excited I forgot the third one.
Well, before you don't even have to get into that, really, because what I want to know then is what can these guys do to get internet players interested? Because let's think of it as the internet player side first. What do internet players like? They like high stakes, a lot of them. A lot of them like high stakes. A lot of them like multi-tabling. And a lot of them like, you know, a different variety of games. Well, okay, you can't multi-table in a poker room. So that shot, you can't, no matter what you do, you can't let them come in and play five sit-and-goes at once. Okay, even if you could have the capacity to do it, you can't do that. Okay, they can't play more than one cash game. It's just not going to happen. They're not going to get up and run from one to the other. Plus, you'd have to have them anyway, because then you're taking away a seat from somebody else to run around playing two different cash games, and you got to be there for both hands and dealing you out half time. That's just not going to happen. So, all right, high stakes, yes. Now, in Florida and everywhere else, you know, there's high-stakes poker anywhere you want it. So, okay, what do you do? Well, you have to get enough people to play high-stakes. So, again, it's just not going to happen because in the online world, you can roll out of bed and get all that stuff without having to get any resources from the company that's providing you this poker game. So I'm trying to figure out what they can do to entice internet players to come.
Yeah, so you just remind me of the third thing.
That's why I did it, because I figured if I did all that, I might remind you of the third thing.
It was player liquidity, you're right.
Yeah.
You know, online, you know, you can put together, I mean, you if you remember back before April 15th, you went online to register for a sit-and-go, you know, you put your name on it, particularly if it's crappy no limit hold'em, it would fill up instantaneously,
yes,
right?
Yes,
it'd be a bunch of them. In a live room, you got to have the people to do it, and there's been very few live rooms I've been in that have done successful sit-and-go business.
Right.
I mean, the only one I can think of off the top of my head is Sarasota Kennel Club, where a good friend Sam is there. And that's because they get on the loudspeaker constantly during the room saying, hey, we got two more spots left. And those are almost for six table.
Yeah,
or six person.
Yeah, six
table. Yeah, they almost never get a 10 going. And the problem is because you don't have enough people in the room to get it going. You know, and if people don't believe me, I mean, go to your poker room tomorrow and sit in front of the waitlist board. And watch how quickly, when they put a game up there, an interest list, how quickly that game fills up.
Yeah.
You could be there a while. I hope they have a good food service. It's just tougher because you're talking about a very limited player base there. So, but to your point, I think what brick and mortar rooms might want to think about. I mean, I like the double or nothing idea. I mean, one of the problems that brick and mortar room managers have, and the ones I've talked about, is and players don't understand, is tournaments don't make brick and mortar rooms very much money.
Right.
If at all. I mean, it's a convenience to get people in. They hope you stick around and play cash games. So they're not, except for maybe their special events, they're not going to give you great structures. Because they just can't afford to have you sitting on a table for 12 hours, not generating any revenue.
Right.
But a sit-and-go, a double or nothing sit-and-go, now you're turning those around pretty quickly, I would think.
Now,
and particularly if it's a six-handed.
Explain to me again the double or nothing strategy, or not the strategy, but the format.
Well, you would, let's say it's a six-handed, the top three get their win money, the bottom three do win nothing. So
okay.
It's essentially like a glorified heads-up match, but it's six-handed, right?
Okay, so you just got to finish in the top three if you're six-handed.
Right. And I would think that business model, if you could get the players to sign up for them, and you might take some scheduling. You know, I think as Tony mentioned, you know, maybe you schedule them and say, hey, at 7 o'clock every night we start our sit-and-goes. And
right.
Try to get trained people to come in at a time. But a double or nothing, you could turn them around quickly enough that the room is making enough rake off of it that it's probably still not comparable to the cash games, but it's probably good enough that they could offer it. To me, I think that's probably the best thing they could do for the internets right now. And he's right. I mean, playing down two spots in a 10-person, I've never understood that.
Yeah.
I know some of the rooms that I played in that did it. It's because the players asked for it. They didn't want to spend that time playing a sit and go if they weren't going to get a lot of money.
Right.
Whereas online, you know, you can play a bunch of them at the same time. It doesn't matter. that big payout doesn't matter because you're playing enough of them that you're making it up. But so I don't know. Maybe the double or nothing is the way to go. But other than that, I can't think of a lot of ways that brick and mortar rooms can really do enough to appease these online players.
No, I can't either. I mean, the quick turnaround with the double or nothing is like the closest thing you'll get to multi-tabling. You know what I mean? Because you'll be able to play one fairly quickly and then go on to another one, but you're not playing twice at the same time. That's the thing. And I just don't – I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, maybe they try something. No, because even if you tried something like two tournaments at once where you played over there and over here or something, you know, then you're still tying up two dealers and making only one rake. You know what I mean? So it's even worse. So that doesn't work either. So as far as trying to please the internet pro or the internet player, I just really, it's just going to have to come back to like comps and if they can comp and in trying something unique that they maybe, you know, like maybe a triple draw game or something. I mean, I really don't know. Maybe it's the variety of games.
You know, I don't think they get the players to do something like that. I would love to see that. I really would, but I don't know. You know, the other thing, too, that we keep forgetting when we talk about online poker, and I know we don't forget it with our show, but, you know, you immediately think about the nosebleed pro players, but, you know, the mass grouping of player liquidity online are people playing micro stakes.
Right.
You know, 1 cent, 2 cent, or dollar tournaments, or $5 tournaments. Those are the people that I think are really lost in this.
Yep.
Because you can't just go in a brick and mortar room, and it was almost impossible for a brick and mortar room to offer something comparable to that and you know, make money off of it. So I don't know where those players go. You know, maybe the free leagues.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, or something like that. But you know, maybe there's something in there for brick and mortar to, you know, offer a smaller minimum buy-in. And you know, one of our local rooms went from a 1-2 no limit to a 1-1.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with a, I think it was a $20 minimum buy-in.
Yep.
Some other rooms do that too. I mean, it's not a good game for the player, obviously, because the rake, it's tough to beat the rake on that. You know, some rooms, down in South Florida, actually, this week, I saw they do a 1-2 limit game. You know, again, you're going to get eaten up viciously by the rake, but, you know, if you're just looking for enjoyment, which I imagine micro limit players, that's for the most part what they're doing, right?
Yeah.
They're not really looking to
put
an addition onto the house. They're just looking to play a little bit and make a little bit. You know, you might be able to talk some of those players into something like that. But, you know, that's a tough decision for a brick-and-mortar manager to make because I know the really good ones really don't enjoy fleecing their players.
No.
You know, they know they're doing some stuff that just isn't good for the players, but, you know, they're trying to make it as accommodating as they can. So it would be tough for them to introduce yet another product that's not good for the players, but...
Now, I don't really understand the bottom line of poker rooms. I can't speak to that, but maybe there's something creative they could do with the caps of the amount that people buy in for to get the micro limits in. Like, you know, it'd be like a 50 cent, $1 game, but the most you could buy in for is $50.
Yeah,
so that way you're not intimidated by how much it's going to be on the team. If you show up without 50 or you feel the pressure to buy in for 100 or 200, they're not going to show up. But if they know nobody can buy in for more than 50, you know, or something like that. I mean, some people might try to take advantage of that, but for the most part, if you're playing bigger stakes, you're not going to go down to that and go, oh, I'm going to go down there and win $50.
Yeah,
you know,
you're
going to be frustrated and bored. So maybe something, I mean, like I said, I'm just throwing that out there because I really don't know what their bottom line is or where they're losing money if they have to surrender a dealer to a game that only rakes 50 cents a hand rather than $3 a hand, or, you know, or something. I don't
know. Yeah, I mean, I think that idea from their standpoint would not, it wouldn't be a slam dunk, but it wouldn't cost them much money. The problem there, again, you get into the morale of the dealer.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine what the tips are like
for
a dealer in a $50 cap buy-in game? I mean, they'll be lucky if they get a dollar a hand.
Yeah.
And then you're creating a morale problem for dealers who, you know, it's their livelihood. So.
Yeah, that's true, too. Of course, that is why they rotate. You don't have to sit in it for 20 minutes and move.
Well, that's true, yeah.
And they all have to sit in it for 20 minutes, so.
But if you're a dealer, would you rather be in a room where you're rotating completely through like 4-8 limit games, where you're guaranteed to get a nice tip, every hand, or know that the room is filled with a bunch of $50 cap games?
No, you're right, and it could be some sort of incentive the rooms do for the dealers, like okay, you come up with your card or something, and say every time you dealt one, we'll you know comp you money or something. You know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, obviously,
right.
I'm trying to take more money out of them, but. I really don't know what the solution is to this problem. I mean, it's just incredible. The solution really is just to throw out all the federal people and pass the damn law.
In the situation in the first place.
So what's he winning? Because that was a great, great mailbag.
All right, Tony, we appreciate it, and we are going to send you a download of the Poker Hand Breakdown Pro, a hand history analysis program for single or mixed games from element26.net. And before our listenership starts laughing about this prize, I did have a long discussion with Dan, the owner of the company. I asked him whether he still wanted to be a sponsor of the show, and he asked me some questions, too. It turns out his product is good if people had saved hand histories and things like that. They can go back and review them, so there still is value there. And then, of course, as we know, there's still a lot of places online to play. So we imagine people are still going to play. And, of course, we have listeners outside living in great countries that embrace common sense, unlike the United States. So there still are people that could use it to its full effect as well, too. So Dan's happy to stay with us. We're happy to have him with us. And I imagine Tony, if he's getting as frustrated as he is with the live rooms, will find a way to use this great prize.
All right, our hotline, 813-448-1120, has been ringing off the hook so much that we've exceeded our monthly quota.
Yeah, I know. I got an email from the folks that administer it and said, hey, you've exceeded your monthly quota, and we cannot accept any more calls into your next billing cycle, you know, unless you want to put more money into it. And I'm like, all right, I'll see you next billing cycle. And the funny thing is Zorag didn't call once.
That's weird.
I don't know how he hit our quota if he hasn't made his normal 27 calls a day.
Oh, man. Don't encourage anybody, okay? We don't want them to say, oh, let's fill their quota and screw them. Oh, this one comes from TJ in San Diego.
Hi, Chris and Scott. TJ Wall 55 from San Diego calling. I got a hand for you that would fit your bill on the dealer muck issue. I had a king high hand on an all-night poker tournament at Commerce Casino. The two behind me indicated that he had queens. I thought he said he had a pair of queens. So I threw my cards into the over the line on the table. He threw the cards in front of me. I realized he only had queen high. I slapped my cards at the same time the dealer touched the cards. I said, hold it. I want to hold these back. I turned them over. I was awarded the winner. The floor came up and confirmed that because the dealer had not put the cards in the muck, I had a valid hand, and I won the pot.
All right, now wait a minute. Now before we all say, see the dealer. Now, first of all, the dealer may not have seen him throw him forward. He may have just been, you know what I mean? He may have been grabbing him. And the dealer just touched him, but you grabbed him at the same time. I'm talking about let the dealer take the cards, hold them in his hand, and as he's going for the mug, say, no, wait, I want my cards back. That ain't happening. But
all right, I think we got a little revisionist history going on here with my partner. But that's all right. I'll let you run with it.
Well, the rule is though, for a lot of rooms, is that if you do fold them forward, it's dead over the line. It's dead. The hand is dead. So in that case, maybe they called the floor over. The floor didn't know the rule. They didn't have that rule in their casino. I don't know, or their card room. And again, we said that in the show too, that it could be a room by room thing. But he did fold them forward. The card should have been dead. You folded them forward, you're folding them. And it passed the line, especially. It's the betting line. It's also the folding line to me. So, but,
yeah, you know,
kudos.
We're not going to go into a long discussion about this again today. But one of the things I think we do need to remind our listeners about that I thought was a little interesting, too, is I have played in rooms where they say that line on the table is just decorative.
Wow.
That it's not a betting line, and therefore it's not also a Chris Cosenza folding line either. So, you know, that's a good thing to ask when you're in a room.
Yeah.
It's, you know, hey, is this line actually real or is it just a mirage?
Am I really seeing this line or am I just so used to seeing it that it's burned in the retinas of my eyes?
Yeah, because particularly if you're new to that room, you don't want to go, ha, he counted out his chips, he pushed it across the line, and have somebody say, yeah, dude, the line doesn't count here. You know, so you might want to know. And the same thing with the folding. It might be good to ask, you know, what constitutes a fold in that room too, if you really want to get in your little list of questions for new rooms when you walk in.
Yeah, yeah.
Ask you to sit down and go away and you have your little checkpoint. Maybe add that to the checklist.
You know what's funny is I think I remember an episode of High Stakes where someone took their cards and kind of like threw them up in the air and kind of forward, but they fell right in front of themselves again, and then somebody at the table was like, that's a fold, that's a fold, that's a fold, and they're like, you know, so they're all talking about it. And I remember them asking Maury to come out and make a ruling. And I thought, Maury runs the show, not the casino. But they're always asking Maury for rulings. It's pretty funny to me. And of course, I wonder if those shows will still be around soon. But it's a room by room thing, and apparently it's a TV show by TV show thing too. I don't know. But kudos to TJ for throwing his cards and then retrieving them and winning the hand and getting someone to actually give him his cards back and let him win. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, not only did you win the pot, TJ, but you also won a T-shirt from PMS Pokerware, which sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys in the Ante Up store at anteupstore.com.
Very cool.
All right, maybe we'll get a, give him a designer shirt with a betting line on it.
Yeah, I was going to say, what's the thing going to be? I want to see it like around his waist, though. I don't want it to be like...
Betting line is below. Holding line's above.
See, now that's hilarious. That's a hilarious shirt for gals and guys. That's hilarious. Folding above, betting below. All right. Well, we've resurrected our Call the Floor segment. This one comes from Simon Orrell. Want me to read the letter and you read the rant
from
Jody?
I could go either way, my good friend.
All right. You read the letter and I'll read Jody's answer.
All right. Here's what Simon writes in. He says he was fortunate enough to get to the final table of a daily casino tournament. Bragger. With four players left, I was a short stack, and there was talk of a chop that didn't go anywhere as the chip leader had a massive lead. After I busted in fourth, though, I hung around to see how things panned out. There was more discussion of a chop, and then second and third place players decided to do a deal just amongst themselves, essentially guaranteeing third place more than the current third place payout, but less than the second place payout. Florb seemed to be encouraging this deal, and I was a little bit surprised because I thought that meant that changed the dynamic of the table for the chip leader who had no say in the deal. Something about this just didn't seem quite right.
Okay, well, here's what Jody Russell, he's our poker room manager on our cruise ships and stuff, and he's also up in Wendover in Nevada. So he says, as a tournament director, I would insist on the chip leader agreeing to the arrangements being made by the other players. If he or she was uncomfortable with the situation, there would be no deal. I would also have to be comfortable with the situation myself. As a tournament director, I must protect the integrity of the tournament, and that includes not letting more educated players take shots at new players. It sounds like they worked it out so they could gang up on the chip leader. This is a situation where that player definitely needed to speak up. What do you think, Scott?
Initially when I saw this, you know, I can't imagine that it should be illegal for people to make a deal that doesn't include everyone.
Yeah.
You know, that's why they go around the room, and if one person says no, then the whole deal's off, and then people get all cranky and stuff. Because there's always just one guy that says no, right?
Right.
And this came up, and we might even talk about it on the show, this came up during the second Florida Million, when they were three-handed. The same kind of deal worked out. Two of the players wanted the chop, the third guy who was the chip leader didn't, so the other two started talking about what they could do on their own, and the chip leader immediately stood, hey.
Yeah.
Can't do that. And tournament director wisely said, no, yeah, you're right, you can't. I think this is a good deal. Now, I guess, I'm not a big fan of banning everything, anything, though, right?
Right.
You know, there's always some situation where maybe it makes sense. So I would say as a chip leader, I mean, you might be able to find a way to exploit this a little bit. Knowing that they're both settling in a sense. I don't know off the top of my head what it would be, but I would say it's probably not the worst thing that could happen. Well, but I definitely don't encourage it. It doesn't seem right to me.
It's weird because I kind of see it the other way, and I feel like it's collusion on the second and third place players' part. Mm-hmm. Because now if they've got a deal where they're comfortable, they have no stress on them. They have no worry about what's going to happen, regardless if they win or lose. Whereas if I'm, you know, the chip leader, now I know, okay, is this guy calling with any two cards or does he have a legitimate hand? You know, and it takes it to a different mind game level that's not fair. We should all be thinking that we're still striving for first place money. And if we're not thinking that way, then it's not fair to you because, you know, these two are comfortable and locked up money, whereas you could still fall to third place somehow.
Right.
And that's just totally unfair. And to me, it's sort of a bit of collusion. And I think it's a disadvantage to the chip leader. In every sense of the word, I don't see how I could really take advantage of it.
I mean, I guess what you're saying is it makes players more comfortable. In general, I mean, when you see a chop, what happens usually?
Everybody goes all in. And
Exactly. People are waving the white flag. They're like, all right, I locked up my money. Oh, we'll just go all in. So if I'm the chip leader, you know, obviously you still got to dodge the bullets there with them going all in with nothing. But, you know, if this is going to become a quick resolution to the tournament and I'm going to guarantee my nearly guarantee myself first place money, I don't know. That would be the advantage. Of course, you have to dodge the landmines. You know, if the guy goes all in with any two cards, you can't just call him with any two cards. And
exactly. And that's the other thing, too, is now you're put in a situation that you wouldn't have been put in if these guys didn't lock up their money. So now you call their all in because you have ace king and he has queen nine. Then he spikes a queen, and now you've lost all these chips to this guy, and you never would have forced all in with that hand. You know, I mean, or whatever. I don't know the bad example, but deuce seven. Who cares? You know, to me, that's not fair. That's not. It's not in the integrity of the game to me.
Well, you know, here's the other thing I think is weird about this too, and maybe I'm not reading it correctly, which you know happens often. if these two players essentially agreed to essentially chop second and third place, which is what it sounds like they're doing, right?
Yeah.
You know, second place takes a little money off the top and gives it to third place, right?
Yeah.
Why could that not just be part of the whole deal?
Right. In other words, you're saying then that the dealer the chip leader just gets the first place money.
Takes first place money. I mean, he's not giving up any value whatsoever, right?
Right.
It's not like they're insisting that he gives up a little of his money to make the deal.
It could have been the deal was something to the effect of, hey, you and I agree to give each other $50 if we end up winning this thing or something, right?
Splitting the two spots. So, if the guy goes out third, then we'll just shop. Maybe it's just poor wording.
Yeah, but if you end up, you know, so we're going to split the third place money, but if you end up winning, we split the difference between second and first or something.
Right, okay. You know, that makes more sense.
If that could have been it, of course, I'd be foolish to agree to that, too. I got some yuck on my left who can't play well, and I end up winning it. Yeah, I'm going to give you $50. So,
I really find it hurtful that you call me a yuck.
But I would never do it to your face. Only on Skype.
I don't know. Interesting call to Florida. I appreciate Simon for sending it in, and Jody ruled as I thought, as he would too. So we got a couple more of these. So this feature will be around for a couple more weeks, and it's probably good that we let people know that they can email us their call to Florida questions to podcast@antiupmagazine.com or post them in the call to Florida thread in our forum at antiupmagazine.com/forum.
All right, well, we got some quick housekeeping to get out of the way. We are expanding. We may have alluded to this on earlier shows, but you can now find Annie Up this week in your favorite poker rooms in Nevada, Illinois, Indiana, or Wisconsin. So on top of all the other 25 states we were in, we are now hitting some big home runs here and getting in some big states. So we're pretty excited, and we're going to be adding more rooms, too, as the as the months progress, probably Oklahoma, Kansas, Missouri, and Minnesota the next month. So they'll look for that in June. And then, or even as early as late May. And then after that, who knows? Iowa, Michigan, other states, California maybe on the horizon. But we need ambassadors, right?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely at this point, we're looking for ambassadors in Iowa, Michigan. And I would say California, too. We've got some interest in California. But if you live in those states and want to be part of the Annie Up team, please, please go to antiupmagazine.com/ambassadors.
Yes.
And fill out the form there. And, you know, I don't want to dilute what we're trying to do on that form, but we do have an interested listener from California that said, you know, hey, one of the requirements on the form is that you get references from three different poker room managers. I don't have that. Does that mean I'm not eligible? And I would say, you know, if that's the only thing holding you back, go ahead and fill out the form and mention that you're a listener, because that might help you a little bit. I mean, what we're trying to do is just avoid people that just have no knowledge of anything, right?
Right. And sometimes, you know, it's hard to dodge a bullet, too. I mean, people may not be looked on nicely in their poker rooms. And, if they're afraid to give us references, then sometimes that is a indication in itself. So it just depends. But generally, if you're listening to our show, we think that you're not, you know, a total goofball. it's a great thing. We've got a lot of ambassadors now. You open the magazine up now, it's like, wow. You know, we've got Northeast one. We have one in Jersey. We have one in Louisiana, one in Mississippi, one in Chicago, one in Indiana. I mean, it's crazy. When you open a magazine, it's like, wow. You know, we're really hitting a lot of these sweet spots and doing it with some great people and great ambassadors, and we're just real excited.
Absolutely. And we're so excited we're going to get on the road again, Chris.
Oh, my God. We haven't had a road trip in ages.
I know. The car smells too nice. Of course, these road trips were flying, too, so the car still smells nice. But as we mentioned previously, we will be hitting Vegas roughly around June 28th, leaving roughly around July 2nd. We'll get the actual dates pinned down here pretty soon, but that is the week that we'll be there. Obviously, we're working on a meetup, and we'll be announcing details on that when we know it. And then just at it, we're going to Atlantic City on June 9th and 10th. Finally got that cheap fare on Spirit, Chris.
Yeah, it's like a dollar each way or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, there's a little bit more there, but yeah, not much more. And we've been waiting to go to Atlantic City, but you know, since we're the two cheapest people in the world of poker, and we knew that the airfare, we could tie the airfare as low as we could if we just waited them out.
Yeah, we waited them out.
Ante up one, Spirit Airlines zero. So we'll be flying up June 9th to 10th, and we'll be putting up together a meetup there. Our good friend Bernice Q has been waiting for us to come up there to be part of the meetup, and she's already said she'll be there. So we'll let people know when we get that figured out, and we'll look forward to seeing people when we get there.
You know, the thing about flying on Spirit Air that really makes me nervous, though, is that I have to fly a shift. I mean, that you know, to actually run the plane for 3 hours... It's kind of tough. They're asking a lot, but you know, that, you want to get the discount, you're going to either that or serve drinks. One or the other you got to do. And you know, I don't like guys grabbing my ass, so I chose to fly. You're the one serving the drink, so hopefully you're wearing padded underwear.
I was ecstatic. The little $2 round trip I took to Fort Lauderdale this week, I got to drive the baggage car.
That's pretty cool.
I was like ramming into the Southwest, you know, baggage police, man. It was awesome.
I want to be the guy with the flashlights that have like the condoms on them. So, you know, so you could tell them which way to go. Come forward, go left, go right. You know, I've been practicing, so maybe I can do that next time we go out. Also, of course, our cruise. You know, more traveling for us. Bookings keep coming in for our summer cruise, which is August 29th out of Port Canaveral. $369 per person. $369.
Not bad.
I mean, you could go to one of your local poker rooms, win a high hand, and it'll pay for the whole family's trip. You know,
yeah.
and if you win the $4,999 one, you could pay for the whole, you know,
you buy the
block.
Boat.
You could buy the boat. And apparently Royal Caribbean saying to us, you know, we like you so much, we're going to drop the price on your winter cruise. Now just $619 per person. And that's like, what, for 147 days on the sea? That's a long trip.
Yeah, that's like crossing the Panama Canal, but not really. No, that's a seven-nighter, so that's less than $100 a person a night, which is a phenomenal price. We're glad that they dropped it for us, and we're happy to extend that value back to our listeners and readers. And remember, folks, go to antiupmagazine.com/cruise for details on both those cruises and how you can book.
Hey, you know, Scott, if I wanted an Ante Up logo shirt, where would I get one?
That's a good question. I'm going to have to say probably anteupstore.com would be the best place to go. And you could also wait for us to come out of a poker room and jack us in the parking lot and take ours. But then it's going to smell and stuff, you know.
Yeah. And it's going to have a big, like, sort of an indentation in the gut area. You know,
a little mustard
shirts.
On it, you know, from the... Hot dogs.
Perhaps blue ribbon stain on one of them. We'll let you guess
exactly
which one that is.
It's much better to go to antiupstore.com and you can get a brand new one that smells fresh and stuff.
Yeah, and not just that. We have other poker products, too. And it's your last chance to get Scott's little, I don't know, trucker slash
retro
driving
trying to
baseball.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a baseball hat. But it's like trucker looking. It's got that netting in the back, and it's got the, you know, it's got, some
very
people like it.
Very comfortable. I wear it to all the Threshers games.
I would imagine Zorag would wear that hat. He's a trucker.
Yeah, they see now you're typecasting there.
No. But, I mean, I'm just saying, it's a trucker hat.
Yeah, okay. Right. I call it a retro hat, so, you know, I would say Don Draper would order it. But so you even know what Don Draper is, so you don't get that reference.
But we have another featured item, too, right? For May, it's going to be our polo shirt with the little Ante Up logo. Same ones that we wear whenever we're on the road. And it's going to be available in white, black, or red, the Ante Up colors, for just $29.95, and shipping is included. That's a great deal to me.
Well, I'm glad you think it is. Let's hope it's a great deal to everyone else, because that's really who matters.
Yeah, I don't absolutely care
so much whether you think it's a good deal. You already have one.
I have like 8.
And then finally, our Annie Up TV, the Chad Brown Championship. It's on YouTube now, Chris.
Man.
So there's a link at AnnieUpMagazine.com, though, that will give you direct links to YouTube. You know, YouTube makes it chop it up like the shrimp at Benihana.
Yes.
But we have all the links on our website, AnnieUpMagazine.com, as well as the updated schedule if you would rather kick it old school and watch it on TV.
You'll know that the federal government has really gotten into you when, if YouTube says, okay, you got to pull down all the clips that have Poker Stars and Full Tilt and Absolute commercials and logos on the players, you know. When that stuff starts happening, then you guys got to really worry about your civil liberties. All right, well, speaking of that, let's see what's going on in the Annie Up News Desk.
The island nation of Antigua is considering filing another World Trade Organization complaint against the United States after Black Friday, Reuters reports. Online gaming is the second leading industry in the nation, which is home to Absolute Poker, one of the three sites targeted by the U.S. Department of Justice. Antigua won its first complaint over the issue in 2005.
Now, Scott, I don't really remember what that meant when they won. Is that sort of one of those things where, like, yeah, you won, but, you know, it's kind of like small claims court, you know, you won, but doesn't really matter, you're not getting anything for it anyway, or did
small
they actually
claims court is a very good parallel discussion to it. On the forum, I posted my, I compared it to winning an award that you made up yourself.
Right.
Like, you know, if Annie made up the best podcast in the world award, we would probably win it, I would hope.
You never know.
Yeah, and then you know, you might get a little mileage out of it by people, you know, not really knowing and saying, hey, that's great, I heard you guys won an award. Yeah, well, thanks, you know, we're trying really hard. But it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
You don't get anything out of it, and that's the problem with this. I mean, these poor nations, and I think a lot of us agree that these are some serious World Trade Organization problems, and the Justice League or whoever it is that decides these cases agree. And essentially what they do is they're able to hold back intellectual property payments to U.S. firms. So in a way, it can hurt. I'm not saying it's not a big deal. I mean, essentially what it does is it hurts other industries. If I'm in an industry where I have intellectual property, I could get hurt by this because of the government's stance on another industry.
Right.
So those are the people that really get screwed. But, you know, the U.S., you know, it's like, whatever, who cares?
Meanwhile, back at the Legion of Doom.
Yes, exactly. So it's a mighty frustrating process. And, you know, I certainly feel for these countries that have, you know, considered these to be good companies and good industries. And then you've got this big, massive company or country saying, hey, you know what, we're just going to screw with you. And, you know, you're powerless to do anything. It's not like Antigua can bomb us, you know. You know, get the, you know, launch a couple coconuts at us or something like that. I mean, it's unfortunate. You know, I'm making fun of it, but it's unfortunate. I mean, what else can they do?
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. All right, well, from the inevitable department, the Iowa Senate has passed a bill asking for the financial implications of online poker to be completed by December 1st, the Des Moines Register reports. The state's legislature had been considering a bill to create an interstate poker system before it died in committee. And in Florida, Representative Joe Abruzzo said on this week's Poker Wars Live radio show that he's attempting some last-ditch maneuvering to revive his bill to create an interstate poker system in light of Black Friday.
Yeah, this is exactly what I think we thought was going to happen after Black Friday, is all these state lawmakers who've been trying to push these interstate bills, which, you know, are not exciting to a lot of us players, and then they ran into some problems. You know, as soon as they can say, hey, guess what, Poker Stars and Full Tilt aren't in the marketing place, it's a lot easier for them to get this stuff moving. And I thought it was very interesting what Representative Bruzzo said on Poker Wars Live, and that those shows are archived on their website at Poker Wars live.info if you want to go listen to me chat a little bit. But no, you really want to, particularly if you're in Florida, you want to hear what Representative Bruzzo said. It's this classic government BS, Chris.
Yeah.
It's just sometimes it just makes me so frustrated that we live in states and countries that govern this way, And I didn't really understand exactly what happened until he explained it. But essentially what happened is, you know, the Senate bill was moving along and then eventually kind of didn't die in committee, just got stalled in committee, right?
Yeah.
So it wasn't going to go anywhere anyhow. But in the House, his bill never got a hearing because the committee chairman in charge of that bill resigned to run for another office.
Yep.
And the House Speaker didn't pick a replacement, decided not to pick a replacement. So every bill filed that went through that committee was dead immediately. How is that a way to govern?
I know. How is that in the interest of the people?
You know, it's one thing if it gets to the floor and people vote and they decide, you know what, hey, we don't like this bill. I can deal with that. I mean, I'll still get upset if it's a bill that I really feel strongly about. But at least it made the process was clear.
Right.
But this kind of stuff, it's just crazy.
Unbelievable.
To say, oh, you know what, I don't want to appoint a chairman. So, and then literally it was hundreds of bills, not just gambling or other things. It was, you know, business and professional regulation. So it ran a gamut of things. And just to have one guy say, you know, I'm too busy today. I got to watch Celebrity Apprentice to find out what I need to order for my poker night party. So we're just not going to appoint a commissioner. Or, I mean, a chairman.
That's just so sad.
Oh, terrible. All right, well, we'll have a little fun here. I guess as much fun as you can have in a robbery story, Chris. But a man attempted to rob the Stratosphere Casino Poker Room in Las Vegas recently, but dropped the chips that he had scooped up after he was confronted by an employee. This comes from Bloomberg Businessweek. The man got away. It was the third such robbery in the city in the past 4 months.
So what are people thinking, Scott? I don't understand.
Do we need to kind of – apparently we got to make this even more clear for people, right? Maybe we're just not so clear on the show that casinos have cameras.
lots
of them.
Of cameras. As many chips that there are cameras basically.
So you cannot just go into a casino and hope that somebody turns his head away from the chip case and go, hey, woo, no one's looking.
Yep.
And grab chips out and expect to get away with it. It's just not going to happen. I mean, even the guy that got away from the Bellagio, which confounds me to begin with that he could get out of the place, they found him eventually. They got cameras. And I guarantee if you walk into a casino with the disguise on it, if you're dressed like the Burger King guy, someone's going to say, sir, you got to take that off so we can see your head. So, I mean, you can't even hide from the cameras that way.
Yep. Yeah. And, you know, every time I go to Vegas, I like to hang out with Big Dave out there. And he loves to tell me the stories of, you know, because his uncle is one of those security geniuses. He's one of the guys that get hired all over the world to actually set up their security and stuff like that. So he loves to tell me the stories of people who steal chips and how they get caught, or, you know, some of the stories. And one of the things that people don't understand, like, people who use $5,000 chips, okay, they're all on record. Everybody knows everybody who uses
they're
the cranberries and the flags, and right, they're all registered. They all know who they are. So if you just happen to show up with a $5,000 chip one day, they're not going to just go, oh, here's $5,000 for the chip, thanks. No.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen. Now, I'm not saying this guy stole $5,000 chips, obviously, but clearly, if they're so sophisticated that they can account for every cranberry and every flag in their entire, you know, backlog of inventory, they're going to not let you get away with stealing $150 of chips, you know, and running with them. I mean, you're screwed. You know, and I remember him telling me a story, I think it might have been the MGM, where these guys came in and just, like, punched, like, the dealers at, like, blackjack tables. And it was like during, like, a Holyfield fight or something. And it literally shut down, like, the entire Vegas
Boulevard.
It should
have bit their ears. That would have been more exciting. Appropriate.
And it may have even been that fight. I don't know. But, you know, people were grabbing chips and everything. And they literally just shut down the casino and locked all the doors. And then anybody who wanted to cash out had to wait, like, 3 days and come in with their ID. And they had all the went through all the video footage and everything. I mean, they're serious about their money. They'll give up 3 days of revenue to stop those people. You know what I mean? Or whatever the case was. You gotta be crazy to think that you're gonna get away with this crap. Look what happened to Turning Stone. The guy wins a bad beat and has to, you know, have someone sneak the player's card over to him so that he can win. Of course, you're gonna see that in the eye in the sky. And if anybody's got the balls to say, hey, that guy didn't really have a card, you're screwed. Just play by the book, man. Why do you need to cheat the system? Because you're not going to get away with it anyway. Hilarious stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I wish I had an answer for this. People are just stupid.
This is Noah Brunson, and you're listening to Annie Up.
All right, we're going to the World Series this year, Chris.
We are indeed, and it's the first time we're going together in a while.
Yeah, I took last year off, and so I'm looking forward to going. I don't think we're playing. I'm not going to play, right? You're not planning to play.
Not even one hand.
Not even one hand?
Not even one hand.
I might change my mind when I get there. But it's tough for me to plunk down $1,500
I'm just going for the 117-degree weather in the shade.
Yeah, and the Ellis Island steak dinner, right?
And watching you wear pants.
Yeah.
In that weather. That's what I'm going for.
But, you know, as we mentioned at the top of the show, we're going to be there the last week of June, and we'll have a meetup and stuff. And we know lots of our listeners make an annual pilgrimage out to the World Series, or at least take one shot at a tournament once, like we did. You know, we've all played one before.
Yep.
Didn't go well for us, and at least in terms of taking anything away from it other than great stories.
Money, it did. Yeah, yep.
But so we've had a couple of people write us and say, you know, hey, I'm thinking about taking my stab this year. Help me prepare. What do I need to know going into the World Series about the World Series and how I can do well out there?
Yep, and you know, a lot of our writers for our magazine have been writing topics on this, how to prepare for them. You know, Joe Navarro wrote, you know, how to prepare for the players that you're going to play against. And Dr. Steve Bloomberg, which we'll take some of his tips, did a lot of the mental preparation stuff. So it's been in our magazine as well, but now it's a nice way to put it all together and one clean, concise show. So why don't you start us off?
All right. Well, first you got to figure out when you want to go, right?
Yes.
And, I mean, the World Series is a long time. We're talking 6-7 weeks. So unless you're just deciding to relocate in 7 weeks, you got to pick the week or weekend that makes the most sense for you. So one of the things, obviously, you're going to go through the World Series schedule and pick the event you want to play in. But one of the other things I think you should keep in mind is that there are a lot of other tournaments in Vegas at the same time.
There's so really many good ones, too.
Yeah, and they're not. Yeah, you're right. They're not even crappy ones. They're just thrown up to hopefully catch some flies. Some runoff. They really are becoming really strong tournaments in their own, and the buy-ins are much less than the World Series events as well too. So I would definitely suggest to people when you know, hey, I could go this week or I could go this week. Check out some of the schedules of the other tournaments. A couple that just come to mind are like the Gold Nuggets Grand Series, the Binion's Classic, the Venetian Deep Stack Series. Check their schedules out. See maybe if there's an event there that you might also want to play. That could be the tiebreaker on deciding what week could go out. And you know, you might be able to. You might find that you'll take your one stab in the $1,500 WSOP, but then you might have more fun playing a couple $300 events at
right.
different series rather than the World Series. So
yeah, I mean, think about the Binion's Classic. Generally, the prices for the buy-ins are 10%, and it mirrors the World Series. So whatever their World Series schedule is, essentially the Binion's Classic schedule is too, but it's 10th at the cost. And
yeah, some of them are like $125 to get in these things.
Yeah, that's fantastic. You know, if you're
you too
yourself,
can get a Hudson Gang page if you cash.
We should start our own Hudson Gang. That's hilarious. And also, of course, consider when we're going to be there. If you want to hang out with us and you want to play an event, see if they all overlap. And if they do, come on out. You know, we'll even rail you if we know you're playing, if we can.
Yep.
But one of the things that always bothers me about these trips, and I'm not good at this at all, and you're great at it, which is why I'm so glad you, like, take the bull by the horns with this, is travel. You know, the airfare and hotels and cars, and I'm just totally clueless when that comes to that stuff. And you're like a globetrotter, so I'm so glad that, you know, you like to take care of that stuff, because I would really cost the company money if I did it. Because I'm just like, oh, it goes there both ways uninterrupted. Take it. You know, I don't even care what, you know, because I don't, you know, I hate, you know, I just the details and it's the minutia. It's crazy. But I'm glad you take the bull by the horns with this, really.
I am, I would say a globetrotter. I'm more of a nation trotter.
But your experience, man.
Yeah, yeah. So here's a couple things that I've learned over the years that might help you out. For airfare, generally speaking, it's going to be cheaper on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Saturdays. It's going to be most expensive on Fridays and Sundays. So, you know, if you have the flexibility to fly, you know, start with those days.
Yep.
You might save a little more money. And particularly this summer, airfare is just getting outrageous.
Yeah, of course.
You know, the gas prices and everything. So you're really going to try to want to squeeze as much money as you can out of your airfare. And think about some smaller airlines, too. Everybody knows, you know, Southwest and Delta and those kind of ones. But there are some smaller ones that don't show up in, like, the orbits or the kayak searches and things like that. So usually what I do when I'm going to a new place is I'll go to the actual airport that I'm flying into, which in this case would be McCarran International, look at their website for what airlines serve the airport, and try to figure out and maybe go to their individual websites and maybe even think about an airport that's close to your house that's not the main one.
Right.
And you might find a better deal that way. So spend a little time on that. I mean, every dollar you save is a dollar you can put in the poker table.
That's right, exactly. And then, of course, you're going to have to stay somewhere. Mm-hmm. So hotels are always important. And, you know, can't promise the, was it $6 a night room that we got that a few years
ago? Something like that, wasn't it?
It was like $7 or something. And the last day was like 40 or something. But the whole trip was $80 for the room. It was great. But the market is bloated right now. So you can find some cheap prices and probably good values on nice places, you know, if you're bringing your kids or your spouse with you. So, the other thing, too, that triggered that nice deal for us, Scott, was that you mentioned that you were a member of a rewards club or whatever.
Yeah.
And as soon as the lady on the phone heard that, she's like, oh, wait, well, if you're a part of that, here, look at this deal. And that's what got us the deal. So if you are, be sure to mention that. That's pretty important.
Yeah, and you don't have to have a lot of points either. I mean, I just don't play anything that generate points. And apparently I had just enough.
Right.
That we got that deal. So, you know, always bring that up. And then, of course, when you're in town, Vegas is one of the cities that I think it's almost a no-brainer to get a rental car.
Uh-huh.
Because there's so much free parking. I mean, every hotel has acres and acres of free parking, or the valet, or you just have to tip them. And that makes a big difference. I mean, if you're going to New York City, you're not going to want to rent a car because it's going to cost you 20 times more a day to park it than it is to actually rent it.
Yeah.
But Vegas is a different thing. But, you know, you don't necessarily need to rent a car. You know, there's a lot of free shuttles that run around, particularly from the chain-owned resorts and particularly for Caesars properties.
Yes.
You know, you'll be able to get to the Rio from the Strip for free by getting on their little bus. So, you know, if you don't want to deal with driving and parking and stuff like that, you know, look at that, plan your hotel around that, and, you know, at that point, you're only going to be paying for getting from the airport to your hotel and back.
Yep. I took the shuttle, I think it was 2009. A couple of times. It was either one of them was because I think you were playing and I was with you, so whatever year it was that we went together, I think it was 2009 or 8, but you were playing in the Grand Series tournament or something, and I needed to get from the hotel to the Rio, and then Dave was going to pick me up there and take me down to Binion's to have the dinner down there while you were playing in the Grand or whatever. So I took that shuttle a few times that year, and it was no trouble at all. I mean, I'm not saying it's ideal because you have to stop at other Harris properties or Caesars properties or whatever it was, but really, I mean, you know, they pick you up, you go, and it's free, and you don't need to rent a car. So that's, like you said, it's more money on the table. So you can consider that as well. You know, the other thing, too, is deciding on an event, you know, what you're going to play, you know, and if you're a listener of our show, you know how to play something other than CLNLH or however you pronounce those letters. So then you have some options. You know, of course, No Limit Hold'em is going to have tons of huge, huge fields, which means, you know, you'll make more money if you cash, but, you know, it's harder to cash. So non-Hold'em events might be the way you want to go, and it might not change your life if you win, but you'll get a picture in our magazine. and also understand how many days each event runs. Like in our magazine, I ran the schedule for the World Series, but I also put how many days it was. So you could plan it. I've heard plenty of stories where, matter of fact, it was I think you and I were playing a charity event with this woman and at Lucky's. That time I cashed in that TV tournament, which we never saw on TV, by the way. but the lady came up to us and said, oh, my God, I had no idea it was a three-day tournament. And I was taking a cab back and forth from, like, the Venetian Deep Stack to the World Series. And so really, make sure you understand that, you know, day two might overlap with another event or something else, or you might not want that many traffic because it might be a bigger event in the room while you're there, and it's going to smell like wet dog while you're in there. So just consider the event you're playing and how long it is and what other events are going to be around it too, in case it's not going to set up an environment you like, you know.
Yeah, and you can kind of make a little guess on what the field size might be based on that. You know, if it's a No Limit Hold'em event overlapping and it's, you know, day two of that event, a lot of people are still going to be in it, playing, and they might not be in your non-Hold'em event
right.
that starts that day too. So, you know, it's an inexact science, but things to kind of think about if you're on the fence. I think and then once you're there, you got to prepare yourself, right?
Yeah.
I think we kind of divided this into like physically, mentally, and from the poker standpoint. But overall, these events are long.
Yep.
Hopefully, if you do well. And they take a different kind of approach to them than your daily tournament in your local room. So physically, I think I definitely would recommend getting into town early.
Yeah.
You know, a day, even hopefully 2 days ahead of time. If you're not on Pacific time, you know, get used to the time difference. And for the people that have been to Las Vegas, they know it's just a complete sensory overload there,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
It's just packed, so densely packed, and it's hot, and lights are blinking, and people are around. So you gotta get used to that, and particularly the stress that all that has caused. Definitely during World Series months, you know, there's just so many people there that you gotta get used to that. And then I'd also suggest going to the Rio the day before. At least the day before we ran, right?
Yeah, and pre-register, right? I guess you go.
Yeah, go ahead and pre-register. Take care of all that early. Get your bearings straight. You know, I would totally suggest finding the table you're going to playing on.
Yeah.
Actually, go there the day ahead, and you know, just get the lay of the land. Know, you know, you'll know what seat you're at, and you can actually. It's kind of like buying tickets on Ticketmaster now, where you can actually click your seat and see the picture.
Yeah.
Where you can see the stadium. I think that's a big psychological thing, and we'll talk about mentally here too, but knowing you can visualize where you're going to be and know. And I would take notes of what that means. You know, is it too hot? Is it too cold? You know, how close are you to the bathrooms or snacks? Plan that kind of stuff out.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you just need to be well-rested for these things. You know, your little daily tournaments that you play at home last 3 hours if you win. You know, this thing could go on for 3 days.
Yeah.
So be sure you're well rested.
Don't be out the night before playing cash games till like 4 a.m. when you know you gotta be there for a noon start the next day. You know, get yourself rested, relax the day before. Maybe do like a show or something. You know, if you got the money and the time. And but yeah, make sure you're well rested.
You know, and I think the funny thing about finding your table too is I tried to do that for the one event I did.
You did. You were in the outside, right? Weren't you in the
Yeah,
tent?
This is why I think it's such a big thing is to ask the questions, is because when I got my ticket, I did this. I went and I wanted to find where I was sat. I found the table. I made all these notes that I said. And it turns out the next day, they put signs over top of those table numbers. And my actual table number was somewhere completely different. And I didn't know this until right before the tournament started.
Yeah.
And I had to run out there. I ended up being in that Pee Wee's Big Top tent, which was completely different all around. It was a lot hotter out there. You know, the bathrooms were farther away, blah, 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 blah. And it really messed me up. So, you know, be sure you ask questions. There's lots of people walking around and say, you know, hey, I'm looking at my ticket. Is this really where I'm going to be tomorrow? Or are the table numbers going to change? You know, get all that stuff out of the way ahead of time. Because the last thing you want to do is when you sit down at the table is be stressed out.
I remember how happy I was that I wasn't out there in my event, because it was brutal.
Brutal. Absolutely brutal.
Absolutely hot and brutal. And, you know, and I played in that one that had 3,000 people. At the time, it was the largest non-main event tournament ever. And I was like, thank God. That was a sea of people. And it's funny, a lot of these things I didn't do because I was just so naive back then. I just, you know, showed up, paid my money, and walked over and sat at my seat or whatever. And really, I would have benefited from knowing all this stuff, because it takes a lot of the stress away. You know, a lot of the stress of finding your table. You're going to get there in time. Are you going to register in time? You know, I mean, I guess what happened now with the online stuff, you're not going to have to really worry about being shut out of anything. But
yeah.
Even the fact that you just pre-register, it's already done. You've got your ticket. You know you're in. You know you guys see. Now you start to prepare for it. You're mentally, you're ready for it. And that gets us into our next thing. You know, Doc Bloomfield is like a, you know, genius when it comes to sports psychology, and he's written books, and of course he's been writing columns for us for a couple of years now. And his last one was about preparing for the World Series, and he said that there's this mantra that he likes to repeat to himself. And you don't have to have this one. You can make a shorter one, longer one, one that's more catered to yourself, but it's something that gets you in the frame of mind that, at least for him, this one does for him, and maybe you get one that gets you in the right frame of mind before you do it. His is, I will develop my poker purpose by defining why I play and accept the pluses and minuses of this decision. Once I accept who I am and why I play, the rest will fall into place. I will learn to be patient and play my game. I will practice and prepare to the extent necessary to reach my goals. I will be persistent. I will sharpen my perceptions and learn to identify patterns. I have a passion for the game equal to the reason I play poker, and poker is pleasurable. Now, for me, I mean, I can totally understand what that does. It makes you in the moment. It makes you understand that, you know what, this is why I play the game. This is why I'm going to the World Series to play, and I need to accept the ups and downs of this and my limitations and work within what I have. Before, you know, instead of just going there and having these dreams of winning the tournament on day one, because you can't do that. So I like that. It keeps you grounded and keeps you focused to me. So
very good. Excellent.
But he's got a list of these things, too, that you can do. He thinks that mental preparation is essential. You know, like you were saying before about the proximity to the bathrooms and things like that. And, you know, he says, make sure you bring your headphones, listen to music, or black out what they're doing at the table. And then don't drink the high sugar, high caffeine drinks. Because, you know, you're going to have a two-hour wait before the next blinds go up. You're not going to be able to, you know, if the bathrooms are far away, by the time you get there, you're going to be in a line, and you don't want to be uncomfortable at the table. So be prepared. The physical part that you said gets you ready for the mental preparation. Don't bring a drink or one that's going to make you have to go to the bathroom if you know you're going to be far away from the bathroom. So, you know, that also is helping you mentally prepare for this. You know, and also develop a plan, right? We talked about, you know, what event you want to play in. Well, there's a reason why you want to play in that event, too. Maybe the reason is the structure. So look at the structure and the blind levels and get your mind ready for the fact that, you know, okay, I know the antes are starting on this level if I'm playing in an Unlimited Hold'em event, you know. And it'll also help the nature at your table, the way the people are playing at the table. And it'll help you prepare for that because you know this is coming. Maybe they're not as prepared as you are. Knowledge is power and reduces anxiety, he says. So pretty important stuff there.
Yeah.
He also, in some of his columns, talks about relaxed activation. And in other words, it's the state of which you'll get your mind will activate and recall what it means to be, at this point, relaxed. And there's a way to activate it. It starts with practicing breathing exercises. We have a lot of his magazines in our archives at antiupmagazine.com that talk about it at length. And he says you should review those articles because being in a state of relaxed activation allows you to use your people reading skills, your knowledge of math, and fundamental poker skills that you have learned and experienced. So once you can achieve this relaxation, then you can truly, you know, tap into all the knowledge that you have as a poker player, rather than being pent up with anxiety. He also said, this last thing, the second to last thing here, practice visualization. I have to admit now, you know, when I cashed in that circuit event, I actually imagined myself cashing. It was kind of weird. I imagined what it would be like to actually have a, what'd you call it? Some sort of gang. What do you call it?
Hudson Gang.
Yeah, a Hudson Gang webpage cashing slot or whatever, you know. I was like, well, that'd be kind of cool if I can get on the Hendon Mob and, you know, and actually make some money in this tournament and play horse and play with the best players in the world, you know, or in the area or whatever it was. And I started thinking about that. I started thinking about myself succeeding and check raising and limit and, you know, and you know, taking away their free card and things like that. I started visualizing having success at the table and see the win, feel the win is what he was saying. Picture yourself following your plan. And I kind of did that. And it worked out. I mean, not that's going to happen every time, because otherwise that'd be the solution to everything, and you'd win 100%. But it worked for me. And of course, practice positive thinking. Don't be negative going into this thing. You're going here to enjoy yourself. You're going here to make money. You're going here to win money. Maybe win a bracelet. Don't be negative. Practice positive thinking. So a lot of good stuff mentally from Doc Bloomfield.
Yeah, he's a real gem that we have, and you know, his definitely check out his archives on our website at antiupmagazine.com.
Absolutely.
And it's a great way to. You know, he talks about stuff that most of us don't think about.
Right, right.
You know, my poker. And there's so much more out of it. And particularly when I'm spending this kind of money.
Yes.
This is the time to actually kind of really try to do stuff the right way.
And the, you know, travel and time, too. I mean, think about it. If you say you're on the East Coast, you're traveling 5 hours. You're spending all this money to get there, you know, and taking a lot of time away from whatever it is you do back at home. And you're going to want it to be the best experience possible and give yourself the best chance to not only win but enjoy it. So you definitely want to think about doing all these things.
Yeah. And of course you want to prepare poker wise you know, we mentioned already going over the structure, but I definitely suggest going over it several times figure out your strategy on it. Make sure you understand, you know, when the big jumps are, if there are any, and that kind of stuff. Definitely read the event rules.
Right. Right. Is this betting line really a betting line?
Yeah. I mean, and again, this is probably the biggest tournament you'll ever play in your life in terms of buy-in. You don't want to ruin it by making a costly mistake because you just didn't understand a particular house rule or something like that. You know, one of the cool things is I just got back from the World Poker Tour event down in Fort Lauderdale, right? And I haven't shown you this yet, Chris, but you're going to love it. They actually put all their tournament structures in a booklet.
Oh, man.
So you know how most of them you go and they have like Xerox sheets and you pick up your actual event?
Right.
But they have an entire book that you can pick up. And at the end of it was the TDA rules.
Oh, very cool.
All of them. And I really enjoyed reading those on the plane home because there were some I just never actually sat down and read all of them. But the World Series has that stuff too. They have the rules printed out, so get those and make sure you've gone over them. And if you have any questions, like I said, there are a gazillion employees there that you can ask. And if they can't answer it, they'll tell you the right person to go ask. You know, you're paying a lot of money to play in this tournament.
Yes.
So don't feel like you're being a pest by asking them to be sure you're clear on everything before you sit down at the table. Because once you sit down at the table, it's much harder to ask those questions.
Yep, absolutely. And also, too, we talked about in the past, you know, reading your favorite book chapters. So, you know, like we did for our show, whatever, a couple weeks ago or whatever, you know, find those chapters that really will pertain to the game you're playing and study them and read them. And just so that they're in your, you know, your subconscious, you know, that you know, you may not really know that you're recalling some of that, but you probably are, and it's going to help you. So, you know, get into that habit too, is reading something that's really good to you, and re-listen to our show too, if that's something that inspires you.
Yeah, nothing else would be fresh in your brain.
Right.
Going over, and I also suggest playing a little bit the night before. I mean, you're right. You don't want to stay up till 4 a.m. playing, but you don't want your first hand of poker in Vegas to be the first hand of your $1,500 tournament.
Right.
You know, go and get used to touching the cards and thinking about stuff, particularly if you're playing one of the non-hold'em games. You know, if you can find a cash game going on, you know, play a little bit. And you know, it's just like, you know, Aaron Rodgers isn't going to go out and throw his first pass after the whistle blows. He's going to go out there and warm up a little bit. So, I mean, treat it as a warm-up.
All right, well, the night before, plan out your schedule so you get plenty of sleep and I guess if you have some sort of pre-event ritual, you know, get it out of the way as well, right? I mean, that's something that, you know, you got to be prepared. Like mine was to read books beforehand, so that's something.
I like to get up and I like to go down to the jacuzzi.
Yeah.
And relax, but I also wanted to be sure I had time to eat a full breakfast and that kind of stuff. I mean, everybody has their own ritual, but you know, figure out exactly what you need to do ahead of time and leave yourself enough time.
Pack your backpack if you're going to bring stuff with you. I don't usually do that kind of thing. I usually don't have the headphones. I don't have, but if I'm going to bring a coat or a sweater or something, I just wear it and then take it off when I get there. But if you do that kind of thing, make sure you double check with everything you might want to bring, like your jacket or your iPod, batteries for, something else, what knows, snacks, water, you know, anything that you could think of that you might need, your sunglasses, you know, your Blue Shark optics, whatever. You know, it's a long day would to be without it if you absolutely have to have it. You know, also don't forget your medications too. You might need your medications. Yeah. You know, so just don't forget that the night before. Pack your bag so you just grab it. Kind of like think about it as a pregnancy.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great idea.
Right, you want your overnight bag ready to go in case that moment happens. So,
yeah, I'm with you. I've never been a backpack guy, but I just bought one and now I'm starting to carry it a lot, and it's real convenient. And so I'm starting to build up my little poker pack a little bit, and you know, just you're right, it's like a pregnancy thing. I also think about it as, you know, a pack a bag if you're going to fly somewhere for the day.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, pretty much all the stuff that you're going to take on the plane you're going to need, because you're going to be gone all day.
Yep.
Hopefully.
Yep.
You're going to get there at noon for the start and you're going to play until, you know, 2 a.m 3 a.m you know, things going well. So
yep, absolutely.
All right, on event day, this I can't stress enough, and I know you agree with me. The Rio is an absolute zoo.
Yeah.
You know, we tell people, even if you're not going to play a World Series event, you got to go there once just to experience it.
Yeah.
It is just like, you know, I love watching The Amazing Race. It's like, you know, when they stop in India. You know, it's just crowds and throngs of people all, you know, loudly talking and stuff going on. It really is. I mean, you can't even – it's impossible to describe it.
Yeah, it's crazy, and especially in the heyday when the main event was going on. I mean, it was screwy. I mean, it's come down a little bit, but really, yeah, it's crazy, especially when there's a break, too. I know we're talking about beforehand now, but when there's a break, just, oh, my God, forget it.
Well, so you got to leave yourself enough time to get there. I mean, obviously, traffic's going to be pretty tough if you're not at staying at the Rio. And then you got to leave yourself plenty of time to just to get through all those people.
Yeah, they're clogging the hallways.
Get to your seat and everything, yeah. And it's just a mess. So don't be stressed out on that.
Yeah. And, you know, don't be intimidated either or starstruck, you know, because likelihood is that you're going to either be next to or at the same table as a really good pro or at least a skilled player that obviously people are putting up this money. A lot of people aren't getting in on satellites anymore. So, you know, you're going to find some good players, but you have every bit as right to be there as anyone else and to win the tournament. So don't let them get into your head. And just because it's a big event and big buy-in, don't change your style because that's what got you to this point of enjoying the game in the first place. So play the way you normally would play. And don't change. Just be who you are at the table.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things, too, is, I mean, I think people, you put all this money in this tournament. You want to walk away with stories, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, if you got a pro there, then you're always like, oh, man, I got to beat him out of a pot because I'll be able to go home and tell someone that I beat Jennifer Harmon out of a pot. And, you know, and then you're messing up your game that way. I mean, trust me, if you're playing your normal game, you're going to get into a pot with these people and you have a good shot at winning them. I mean, don't force the issue.
Right.
Just have a story. I mean, the stories are going to happen.
Yep.
You know, you never know. You might get up from a break and your chips will be gone, you know.
Yep.
You know, you didn't plan for that story, did you?
And stop the World Series for 15 yeah. minutes. Yeah, no, I didn't plan for that. I loved hearing the dealer tell me I was shit out of luck, though. That was my favorite thing.
You know, we had Joe Navarro on the show recently. And, yep. You know, he's got this new ebook on Tells that you can download, you know, to your phone even.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great thing. Because you can visualize, look at the tells, you got it right there on your phone. That's a great idea. Take that and get there early. Look at that. And then remember, when you get there, you got to identify your opponent's baseline for any of Joe's great tips to work.
Right.
If a guy sits there and has happy feet constantly, you know, it's not a tell.
Right.
He's got happy feet. It's going to be a tell when he doesn't have happy feet.
Right.
So you got to know that kind of stuff. So, you know, I don't think you can get to the table too early. Because people will sit down and you can start, you know, paying attention to them and establish that baseline stuff. And then you'll know when the event starts, you know, what the differences are and use that to your advantage.
Absolutely. And then, you know, and the final thing is, you know, these are long tournaments. And you, or hopefully they'll be long. And you need to fight the boredom. You know what? You find things to keep your attention, like paying attention to the way people play or you know, the way they bet. And try to keep track of all that stuff. Even if you have your smartphone with you and they allow you to take notes or, you know, whatever it is. You know, especially if you're playing No Limit Hold'em, you're going to be folding a lot of hands. So, you know, try to find stuff that's going to keep your interest and not make you, you know, start to stargaze or whatever. And that's, you know, that's pretty important because like we said before, you're out there spending a lot of money, a lot of your time, a lot of your effort and energy. Don't waste it by falling asleep at the table because you're bored, you know. Don't be bored by it and take it all in.
Absolutely. Well, hopefully that's good enough tips to get people started. I'm sure we missed something here or there, but you know, I imagine you go to antiupmagazine.com/forum and tell people when you're going, and you might be able to meet up some antiup folks and get some of their own tips on what they've done. I mean, we've had a lot of our listeners play the main event. We haven't done that yet, so.
All right. And best of luck to you. Good luck, and let us know how you do.
Hi, this is Shauna Hayek, and you're listening to Ante Up.
Sometimes the hands of the week, Chris, are more fun just for the games that we're talking about. The actual hand may not be spectacular, though in this case I think the hand is pretty good in itself. But this comes from our good friend Malcolm. He's written us before,
yeah.
But it is a No Limit Omaha 8 hand, Chris.
No Limit 08. Oh man.
And I know when you saw that on the notes, you had to say you chuckled right then and you're still chuckling now.
It's hilarious.
Yeah, it is in a way because I'm really, on principle, I'm against No Limit Omaha 8. As much as Omaha 8 is my favorite game and I'll play it in any format that I can find people that want to play it. But, you know, we talked on the chapter show a couple weeks ago, and one of my favorite chapters was the Pot Limit Omaha chapter, in the Full Tilt Strategy Guide, because Chris Ferguson spent a long time talking about pocket aces in that, right?
Right.
And one of the things was, in that chapter, another chapter, was that the reason that Omaha's played pot limit is because if not, mathematically, you should go all in every time you have pocket aces.
Right.
So by having pot limit, it prevents people from doing that, and it provides more play. Now, obviously, not everybody's skilled enough in the game to know that, but essentially, no limit is a very bastardized version of this game. It's meant to be played pot limit or limit.
And, you know, to me, I love the idea of no limit, though, in this game. And here's why, and it was funny because, and I didn't have time to set this up. I would have liked to have gone and seen the guys again, because I'm going to Connecticut this week, and you know, every time I go up, we usually have, you know, our friend Jason up there, JLB Sox, would put together a home game, and we'd play and stuff, and I didn't have time really to get that together this time, and I really regret it. But the first time I ever went up there, they were the guys in the home game that they had were so into No Limit Hold'em that when they played the other games, they didn't know how really essentially to play them limit.
Right.
So they played them all No Limit. So they were playing Stud No Limit. They're playing Crazy Pineapple No Limit. And it was like, whoa, guys, you know, I'm all for the No Limit stuff, but in Stud? So we kind of got the Stud figured out for them. But they played Omaha 8 No Limit, I think. And that was exciting to me because now you really have to put people to decisions because, you know, in Hold'em, all right, there's like one nuts right there. Maybe there's two nuts there. But with this one, is he going with the nut low? Does he have the same nut low as me but a redraw to the high? I mean, you could shove with so many things and feel so safe and secure and warm like a blanket. And I mean, to me, No Limit Omaha 8 is like the only way Omaha 8 should be played. I don't want to play it PLO because PLO 8 is just a pain. You're going through all the trouble of trying to keep a track of what, and then ultimately you're just going to split the damn thing anyway. So let's just make it limit or no limit. But limit is so boring because you can't get Dr. Frank off of a straight when you bluff him. And so, you know, you play it pot limit, and even then you still can't get him off the straight. So, but if we played no limit, Dr. Frank would have folded when I bluffed last time in the home game. This time he wouldn't. So I think No Limit 8 is genius, and I'm going to enjoy this hand as much as possible. I encourage you to play No Limit Home 8.
Oh, man. All right. Well, gosh. I mean, there's really nothing left for us to talk about the hand now after that discussion.
Oh,
all right, but of course, this is from a home game. This is why it was No Limit. Though for those of you still lucky enough to be able to play online, I have seen it No Limit online. But this came from his home game. He said starting stacks were $4,500.
What?
I'm going to assume it's a tournament.
Oh, okay, so $4,500.
But he put a dollar sign there to impress us.
Okay.
And I'm duly impressed. All right, so to start with nine players, they're down to four now. Blinds are 150, 300 with a 25 ante. And actually, this is a Ho tournament, I guess.
Oh, okay.
So they're in the Omaha 8 rotation of it.
All right.
All right, and he's on the button with his starting stack of 4,500, interestingly enough.
Huh.
All right, and he has it's folded around to him, and he looks down at Ace of Spades, Queen of Spades, Five of Hearts, Five of Clubs.
Okay. That's a pretty nice hand.
Ace of Spades, Queen of Spades, Five of Hearts, Five of Clubs.
You'd like to have another wheel card in there, but, you know, that's a nice hand, you know, especially since there's no limit, you know, anything could happen.
Yeah, it's been folded around to us, and we got position on the hand, so.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, it's four-handed already, so I guess.
Yeah, so basically it's one fold. But,
but still.
But still, we got position. The blinds could have any cards. We got a suited ace. We got two wheel cards, and we got a possible set flop tier two if you know, the five comes. So, pretty interesting stuff. Broadway draws, wheel draws. So I like this hand. I wouldn't have a problem raising the, like, I don't know, 850, 950, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. This is a hand that could get you in trouble earlier in position, but on the button, I mean, you have to raise here. You absolutely have to raise here. I'd be happy to take down the blinds and the annies, and if not, then you know, you've got a hand, as you mentioned, could go a lot of different ways.
Yes.
So, since it's 900, normally you do with a 3X. I usually, because the annies, I add it up. So I'll probably bet $1,000 here, I would think.
Okay. All right, $1,000.
And if, you know, if I win, that's what, $450, you know, $500 there. And so I guess, you know, I'm betting a lot to win a little bit, but that's the way it works, right?
Yeah, I mean, even if you bet $900, which was standard, you're still betting more than what's in the pot, obviously. So I don't have a problem with that. And I would probably bet like $950, but yeah, $1,000's good too.
Okay. Well, our hero decides to call Chris to $300.
Ooh, why? Why call? I don't understand. Why call? Right? I don't get that. I would have to raise here. I can't call here. You know, first of all, you're giving the big blind with four cards in his hand. You're giving him a free chance to hit. You know, yep. That's like six hold'em hands. You know what I mean? You're giving him six chances to make a decent hand. No, I can't do that. And then the small blind too only has to call 150 now. You know, to win essentially 850 or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's just not right. So you have to raise here. I don't like that at all. We got a great hand.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, I emailed Malcolm with my thoughts before we did on the show, too, and one of the things that came back is, you know, hey, I'm new to the game, and I'm still trying to figure out when to raise, and I think I mentioned that a couple shows ago. That's the one question we get a lot, is people just don't know when to raise in Omaha 8, and I've heard at the table a lot, oh, man, I don't know, I never raise in Omaha, and I don't know why you would ever raise in Omaha 8, and this is exactly why.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to give the big blind a shot to, I mean, a big blind hand in Omaha is so valuable.
Yeah.
Or so dangerous, I should say, not valuable. You know, you never know what's going to happen. I mean, you could look down, it could be the worst starting hand in Omaha 8, but it could flop quads.
Yeah.
You know, it could do a lot of different things. So I'm not going to give the guy a free shot, especially when I'm on the button. And it's a hand that if I get called, hey, great.
Yeah.
I got a good hand.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's not a good move. You know, and generally too, if you want to revert back to your hold'em, you know, think about it that way. You're playing three-handed, and you have ace queen suited and a pair of fives. You know,
either or of those two, you would raise, right?
Yeah. So in this case, you know, you only have to beat, you know, two players and to at least get heads up, and you're in position. So this is definitely a moment to raise.
And remember, it's high-low, too. So, I mean, not that it's not the best low, but, you know, you got to back up for the low.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a hand I'm really trying to play more for the high or just take it down. But
yeah.
I've got backup, so.
Absolutely.
All right, well, he calls to 300. The small blind, Chris, raises to 800. Hmm. And he's described as a solid player and the chip leader with squiggly 10,000.
Hmm.
And probably the best player at the table. The big blind folds, and he gets back to us.
Oh, now I'll call. That's what I would have raised to anyway. I don't think I have a re-raising hand. Had the under-the-gun player raised, I would have just called. I would not have re-raised. So that's another thing, too, is what our raise would have meant. Who knows? Maybe the guy out of position would have just called here. Now, you know, we're calling at his price, but I would just call here. I wouldn't raise again. This is not that strong of a hand, especially when it's no limit. This guy could shove on you now with ace, whatever, and you have no shot. You have to fold there. So I would just call now.
Yeah, he's a chip leader, which is dangerous because he can knock us out of this.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not, again, our hand is not great, but it's pretty strong for the position. So I could recommend re-raising against another player, but not a solid player who's raising us from the small blind and has us covered. I mean, we kind of lost the initiative here. And that's what really kills me about it. You're right.
Yeah.
You know, had we raised, we don't know what would have happened.
Yeah.
This guy, would he have just called because he's just trying to take advantage of us here? Or folded even, maybe?
Yeah, because maybe he's only raising because he thinks that we're weak. And maybe he doesn't even have a hand. But if we had raised, he would have folded. So,
And if we raised and he re-raises big, then you know what? We might be able to lay this down and not worry about it.
Yeah.
At this point, and get into a hand where we could get trapped. You know, if from his point of view right now, not knowing anything else, I would say if I'm in a four-handed game and the button just limps, I got to think that he's weak.
Yeah.
Because even with a weak hand, the button should raise every time there. And I don't know what the big blind is. We don't have any information on the big blind. But if I'm probably going to be raising with a wide range of hands now from the small blind. Because I just picked up an extra dead 300 there.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's no way to re-raise again. Because if you're going to re-raise him, you're looking at least a 2,400 unit bet. And you only have 4,500. So you're going to be putting half your stack in. You don't want to do that with this hand. So... clearly, you want to be the first one showing initiative here and raising. So I would just call here and see what the flop brings.
Okay, well, that's what our hero does. And he says his first question is bad call, and I think we've answered that. The first call was a bad call.
Yeah.
The second call was a good call.
Right.
Pot's 2,000 now, and the flop comes jack of hearts, nine of hearts, nine of diamonds, and our opponent checks to us.
Oh, that check is really fishy. I don't think that he... Yeah, that check is fishy, because let's put it this way. If he was raising... And this is just me, and I'm a terrible player. So, but if he was raising because he thought we were weak, then he would have continuation bet here, because he's not going to raise and then check, because he the reason he's raising because he thinks we're weak. Since we called, he's going to have to put some sort of bet out there to continue his ruse, and he didn't. So to me, this is really fishy. It seems like he's hit this hand, because what, is he afraid of a nine now all of a sudden? I mean, he's got to find out. He's chip leader. He's a good player.
Yeah, that's the problem. His chip leader, he loses a little bit of deception here.
Yeah, so I would think he'd have to bet here if he was bluffing or if he didn't have any of this. So now, of course, the low doesn't get there, so he could have had ace, deuce, tray, you know,
let's do it,
ace. But to me, I feel like he still has to bet, because it is no limit. There is a high hand in Omaha every single time, no matter what. So I think that he has something. And I could be wrong. You know, he could get to the end and he had ace, deuce, tray, four, and I'm out of it. But I feel like it's fishy here. I don't feel like I'm putting any money in. Of course, we missed it completely, too.
Yeah, we totally missed, which makes it a little easier for us.
You know, we can't make a low. We can't make a spade flush. We can make Broadway, but it won't be the nuts. We can make a full house, but it won't be the nuts. So, you know, we can make quads, but that ain't going to happen. So what's really going to hurt is if a five comes on the turn. That's what's going to suck. But I'm checking behind. I have no reason to bet here. I mean, I could be aggressive if I knew this guy was a weak player or whatever, but he's not. And this is a fishy check to me, and I have to check behind.
Yeah, here's the thing. If we against a weaker player with a smaller stack, I might put a bet in here just on the hopes that he had nothing but a low hand.
Right.
And we can get him to fold. That happens often in this game. You know, you people that are playing just for the low, and you get a board like this that makes the low impossible to get there. You make a bet, boom, they fold.
Right.
But this player's good, and he has us out-chipped, and he raised in the small blind. So I don't. And we've already put in a fourth of our stack. I don't want to put any more money in here unless I'm pretty confident that I'm going to win the hand. And we don't really have any backup here if we get called.
Right.
I mean, we're looking at a two-outer for a boat that might not even be good.
Yeah.
So I'm happy to check behind and just, you know, if he's on just a low draw, he'll check on the turn again, and I can check again, and then, you know, maybe I'll prove enough to win a showdown here. But we really lost the initiative on this hand.
Absolutely.
All right, well, our hero does check behind as well, too. The turn is the five of diamonds.
Yeah, well, oh, my God. That's why it's hand of the week. You know what I mean? You knew that was coming. You knew that was coming.
So our board now is jack of hearts, nine of hearts, nine of diamonds, five of diamonds. Of course, that is one of our two outs to give us a boat. And our opponent checks to us.
Oh, God. See, you knew the five was coming. I know, and I don't have this hand of the week. I mean, it's not like I get to see this ahead of time and read it. I mean, it's just so brutal. All right. So there's 2,000 in the pot. We have, what, about 3,700 or so?
Yeah, 3,400, I think.
All right, 3,400. So, oh my God. If you bet half the pot, you're betting a third of your stack. If you bet two-thirds of the pot, you're betting half your stack. Oh my God. Let's check one more time, because a low can't get there. It can't hurt. What's going to hurt us, really? Either we're beat or we're winning. So let's check one more time, Scott. Keep the pot small.
Yeah, at this point, if we're up against pocket jacks or pocket nines, we're dead.
Yeah.
If we check, I mean, obviously, if we're up against a nine, then that river card could outboat us.
Right.
But really, that's about it at this point. At this point, again, because we lost initiative, if we had taken the initiative, then we would have been in a much better spot here. And we could play this a lot differently. At this point, I'm just giddy on the inside that I actually hit my two-outer. And I'm going to be giddy as I can to get to showdown without putting any more money into this.
Yeah.
I mean, or at least waiting for the river.
Maybe ace, deuce, jack, nine. could have a hand, maybe.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, but
I mean,
yeah.
But very, I don't even think that's.
But again, the end, we can't beat that either, too, unless,
right,
you know.
Right, that's
you
what I mean. I'm trying
hit
to
the case five, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I definitely think we have to check here, regrettably, I think.
Yeah, I'll know. Check.
Had we taken the initiative, then we had more options. But.
If he checks the river, he doesn't have a full house. And then you could comfortably bet maybe he's got a third nine or something. But and even if he bets the river now, he's not going to bet. He's not going to put you all in, probably. And if he does, then you got to make a decision. But at that point, you know, I think you've kept the pot small enough where he might put a feeler bet out of 1,000. You can comfortably call and say, I just couldn't put you on a hand that I could beat, really. I felt like you were to trap me or something. You know, whatever. But I don't mind the check there, believe it or not.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is now look at this board. We got two hearts. We got two diamonds.
Yeah.
We have the straight draw there. There's a lot of cards that could come that could help our opponent's hand, but not enough to beat us.
Yeah, yeah.
So in a lot of ways, I kind of want him to catch up here. I mean, if he's way ahead of us, we certainly don't want to lose our stack here. But if he's behind us now, I want him to catch up.
Right.
And make a stab at it and maybe catch. And I got to say right here, before we get to the river, this is why I like pot limit more than no limit. Because look at this. If we check behind, which we're going to do, right?
Right.
The most he can bet on the river is 2,000.
Right.
We're not going to be eliminated from this tournament.
Right.
But it's no limit, so now we don't know what's going to happen. Let's say a heart or a diamond or the straight card gets there, and he thinks he has the best hand and pushes all in. We're at a test now for our entire stack.
Right.
I'm not saying that we don't want that, because right now, I mean, we don't really know. Maybe we're hoping for it. But I would feel far more confident with this hand on the river calling up to $2,000, hoping that it's good and chipping up, and if not, knowing I'm still in the tournament.
Yeah. Yeah, of course, it wouldn't have gotten to this point either. Pot limit, it would have been a lot smaller pot. And if it was limit, it would have been pot of 1,000 or whatever at this point. So
well, yeah, but I mean his preflop raise was in line with pot limit, and there's checks right now. So I mean the pot would still be the same. I mean maybe it would be a different action if people know
right.
the rules differently.
Right.
But I mean right now that pot limit is just so crucial for me.
Yeah. All right.
I
mean, well,
he gets you right out here. So
what did he do?
All right, so our hero had a gut feeling that his villain was slow playing something big on the flop, was surprised when he checks, but he says, probably my second terrible move of the hand, I check behind.
Wow.
Yeah, pat yourself on the back there.
Yeah, you're as terrible as we are.
you put yourself in the situation where a check is really your only good move here. And I guess I should say, if we're going to bet here, you might as well just go all in, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Not going to fold to anything with the boat, so you might as well put the maximum pressure on him and... But he checks behind, which I think is the right thing to do. Not a terrible move at this point. All right. He says the flop comes to three of diamonds. I'm going to say that's probably the river.
The river, yeah.
the river is the tray of diamonds. So our final board is jack of hearts, nine hearts, nine of diamonds, five of diamonds, tray of diamonds. So the flush gets there.
Mm-hmm.
No straight. And he says he's surprised once again when the villain checks.
Oh, my God. All right. That's it. I mean, I'll just bet 1,000 and see what he does. And if he shoves, I have to call anyway. You know, I mean, if he really was this careful with jack, jack, ace, deuce or something, I mean, or, you know, ace, deuce, jack, nine, I mean, more power to the guy. I mean, really, I mean, checked it three times with a 2,000 unit pot out there and you're, you know, I can't imagine. Maybe he's afraid of the flush now and he has a naked nine. I, what was that check for too? So, I'm gonna bet. I'm not gonna be happy just winning 2,000 with a full house like this if he's checking three times to me or whatever. So
yeah.
I'll bet 1,000, and if he re-raises me, I'm calling and saying you're unbelievable to do that three times. That's
yeah, you're right. I mean, the line here is the believable lines here are that he had a low only hand and didn't get there, and doesn't want any part of this pot now. So when we bet, he's gonna fold and we'll take the 2,000. And if he had a monster, it's really showing tremendous restraint to not bet at all and hope that we take a stab here on the end. And I mean, I guess what's complicated, some people might say here, you're only going to get called by a better hand
right,
here, but
right.
since the flush got there, you know, we very well may get call. I mean, our bet, we might get a lesser hand to call us here.
Yeah.
Because of that, maybe he had a weak flush and was just hoping he could see to get the showdown
cheaply, and by checking, we set a low price at 800, and he's like, all right, I'll take a shot. And so there is value, a lot of value here in betting, I think.
The other thing, too, is maybe the opponent, is thinking the same thing that we're thinking now, that we called his raise with a low draw that didn't get there, and he knew that we weren't going to bet, or that we weren't going to – he's trying to let us catch up because he has such a monster. So there is a way of thinking of it the other side, but this is just – it's too weird that he checked that many times, didn't try to extrapolate any kind of money from you at all. So I think we got to – I don't know. I feel like we're ahead here. But really, why is it a hand of the week if we're not? If the guy just mucks his hand, you know, it's – but I don't know. Maybe you don't bet, Scott. Maybe you just check it down and say, you know what? I'm not going to get you to call if you have a worse hand. But I don't know. Maybe he does
have
that flush.
Here's a defense for checking. It might seem weak on the outside, but remember, we're fairly short stacked at this point. I mean, we put in, 1,100, so we're down to 3,400. If we check and we win, we still win 2,000, so that gets us back up to 54?
Well, we didn't put 1,100 in. We put in 800.
Oh, 800, yeah. Sorry.
So, all right, yeah, but even so, we put in 8. There's 12 out there. So we'd get up to 57 almost or so if we won this pot.
Well, we put the 300 in to begin with.
Yeah, that's but he only raised to 8, you said.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. So we only put 800. You're right.
So it's 5,700. If we win this pot, we'd have 5,700 in the stack, which is pretty good because then this guy's down to 9,000. So, you know, you're getting close to him, and you've increased your stack, so...
So really, at this point, I mean, the difference what you got to figure out is am I happy with a pot that's going to give me a good percentage increase? Not great, but a good. Or am I risking giving up a value? And if I do bet and I get re-raised, am I forced to call with my boat here and I'm out?
Yeah.
Or if I just check behind, I would still be in the tournament. You know, it's tough.
Yeah. I feel like if I was in the tournament and I was playing with you guys, and I could feel that you're not really being deceptive here, that it's just you've resigned to checking or something, I would put a bet out. But because it's straight paper here and I can't really get the feel how this guy plays or whatever, I feel like I'd want to check. I think if I was actually in the game and this happened, I would be betting. But the way it comes in and always comes in these games, we always end up getting these hands of the weeks that they lose. So
yeah,
I think I would check here.
If I get the read that he's that he's got a flush and might just call my bet, then why not? But if I'm afraid that he really was, I mean, our gut feeling, our hero's gut feeling earlier, whether he's slow playing something on the flop. If he's slow playing something on the flop, that has his beat.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to slow play just trip nines there, I don't think. I mean, obviously it's a four-handed tournament. Your heads up, maybe. I don't know if you want to take the risk of the hearts getting there.
Yeah, or straight.
Certainly not the diamonds get there. Yeah. So, and if you're slow playing, he has his beat. You know, so it's really, it's a gut, what we really think. And I'm going to go with his gut that somebody is slow playing here. So the safest move is to check and be happy with a $2,000 pot.
Did he check?
No, he said he was surprised with the check, so he bet 800.
Hmm.
A little less than half the pot. A fairly safe bet. That leaves us about 2,900. And our opponent goes all in.
Yeah, you knew that was coming. Well, you can't fold. I mean, you were saying before you got a full house and you can't fold. You can't fold. You're getting, well, let's see. We have about 2,900.
I can make a case to fold. I think the problem is we set ourselves in a situation that we're going to talk ourselves into calling here.
More than 2-1 on your money with a full house. Almost 3-1 on your money.
Well, remember, again, this is your S factor here.
Yeah, I know. Can you fold?
We don't know how many people get paid. It's a 9-player tournament. I'm going to guess 3 get paid, so we're on the bubble now. So
you have less than 3 big blinds. I mean, 10 big blinds, and your M is probably like 7 or 8.
So I'm not at all suggesting that because of your S that you fold here, but I mean, we took an ill-fated attempt to put 800 into the spot that got brutalized. You know, we really well could cut our losses here with 10 big blinds.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of what our read is. I mean, we think he's pushing us around, and we need that money. If we're trying to win this tournament, then obviously we need to chip up, and we got a boat here. Boom, but, you know.
I don't think he's just shoving with a diamond flush. That's the thing. And I don't think he's bluffing.
So then we're behind, so there'd be no reason to put it in, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and there's no other boat that we beat except Pocket 3s.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
I mean, or 3-9. No, you lose it. 3-5 isn't a full house. So, yeah, no. I mean, this sucks.
I think it's stacked against us here. I mean, I would hate laying this down, but we put ourselves in a situation where we have to make this tough laydown, I think.
Yeah, I think we should.
If we just checked behind, we would have seen it, and we would have known exactly what's going on, and, you know,
All right, well, in this situation, I probably end up folding. Just because if it is bubble and I am like second in stat or third in chips or something, I still have about 10 big blinds or so, a little less than that. So I don't know. And also it is ha. Oh, it is a ha, right? You said it's no. What right. is it?
Yeah,
Hold'em and Omaha 8 or.
Yeah, I'm guessing Hold'em, Omaha, and Omaha 8, I guess.
Or something. So, I mean, you know, you have other games coming, too.
Or maybe the E is studied. I don't know.
I don't know. So, I don't know. It's tough for me to fold here. In our home game, I call because I can't put you guys checking three times a monster like that. There's just no way. Especially since you know the low isn't going to get there. And you're going to run the risk of not getting a bet if I had just a low hand in my hand.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You're going to bet the river. So in our home game, I probably call that. In this game, the way it's played out and the way he's told us and everything, I probably fold. So I guess I'm telling him to fold.
All right. Well, our hero says he's thinking he might have hit the nut flush and was trying to push him off of his nine, which you said you can imagine that happening.
Yeah.
So our hero decides to call, and our villain turns over the jack of clubs. Jack of diamonds.
Yeah.
And he doesn't tell us the other two cards.
Yeah, we don't need to know. Unless it was 9-9. It really doesn't matter. But that clearly was the hand that we put him on the second he checked that flop. That was the hand I put him on. I mean, 100% two jacks. And it's a shame. I mean, like I said, in the home game, I probably call our home game. But in this situation, the way we've taken it out and that it's a hand of the week, you have to think you're behind here and fold it. And you still got 10 big blinds if you do.
Now, you said the other two cards don't matter, and you're right in terms of the pot here, but I really would have been curious to know what those other two cards were because it helps you go back and study the entire hand. I mean, was he raising with just pocket jacks?
Yeah.
Which is fairly loose, I would think. I mean, did he have a low draw to go with it? I mean, the ace-deuce was part of that hand, which makes it a little better. I'd kind of want to know that going forward. That really kind of helps you... Get a good player profile on this strong player, knowing what hands he's raising with. But
man, see, that's the inherent flaw with hands of the week too. It's, you know, you can't go back in time and play it the way we would have played to see what would have happened. So now you have to adjust to the quote mistakes that the hands are making, and then even then you're still getting flawed information the rest of the way. It's tough, especially something like this where they can go all in at any time.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing about not knowing these two cards is, I mean, we were both adamant that we should have raised pre-flop.
Yeah.
So without knowing the other two cards, we don't know whether this guy would have stayed in the hand or not.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't have anything but these two jacks, I can't see him even being the chip leader and being a solid player calling us with just pocket jacks.
Yeah.
I just can't see him doing it.
No, because you've got to go both ways, and if you can't, what's the sense?
And if that's the case, then we would have won the blinds and Andy's here and still been in the tournament and maybe had a shot at winning this thing.
Yep. Absolutely brutal. Sorry, Malcolm.
Oh, hey, you know, he's getting used to the game and he's learning, and that's the way to do it, is to send it to a couple people that know the game just a little bit more than he does.
Yeah, because I've played No Limit Omaha 8 like every day.
All right, Malcolm, you know you're a previous swag winner, but everybody else, if you would send your hands of the week to podcast@antiupmagazine.com or any comments that make it on the show, you would be eligible to win one of our great prizes. Say, for example, a deck of J-Design playing cards, the official playing cards of Antiup, now available in the Antiup store at antiupstore.com.
All right, so if you guys are going to the World Series, keep us posted, tell us when you're going to be there, and tell us how you did. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Antiup is a production of antiupmagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120.
If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@anyupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.